Show.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, hello again. Howdy. All right, let's try this again, this time with feeling, actually this time with audio. I need a keeper, I need a staff, I need a producer, I need a lot of things. I just did 15 minutes of really cool radio, and I did it just for me, because not a blessed iota of a phoneme went out over the series of tubes. Highly frustrating, to say the least. Nah, I didn't have all the knobs and buttons in the right places. But now I do. I have to add another thing to the list to do, especially when... Because, see, I just got in and I jumped in the chair and you're off and going... There he goes! And there's about a million things that have to go right in order for a program to get out over the air. And I did 999,999 of them correctly. It only takes one. It only takes one. But that's okay. I have a photogenic memory. It's the only part of me that is photogenic. I have a photogenic memory, so I'll just try to recreate what I was babbling about for the first 15 minutes. And since it'll be the first time you heard it, well, doggone it, it's bound to be good. You know, I don't mind screwing up, especially when I've got a good excuse like, meth, crack, pure grain alcohol punch, something like that. No, that's fine. But these stone-cold sober screw-ups are just a little bit... But you're going to have that, because I just got in the door a little bit ago. Had to jump into the chair. So, what I opened with, I just wanted to let you know what we had going on, a little bit of an update. A little bit of an update from... yesterday evening's tremendous conversation with John Walton. And I had a conversation with him on the phone this morning, and I said, well, what's the latest, John? And he said, the Johnny on the spot EPA, that's my phrase, not his, the can't slip anything past him EPA, here a week and a day after the disaster in Roane County, Tennessee. Well, a week and a day after, they finally issued a warning. And that warning is to people with wells. And that warning is, don't drink the water. The water in your well is toxic to human consumption. Yeah, Marty just... Marty... Not on yet, or have the senior partners altered time? Yeah, I looked over and realized Mark Levine's rerun was still rerunning again, too. But no, I'm on. Everything is okay. All is well with the world. But no, it's not well with the world for the wells of the people in Roane County, Tennessee, Harriman, Kingston. Don't drink the water. Your wells are poisoned. You know, when I hear, of course, coal companies up here in West Virginia have been poisoning wells for years. it's one of the things they do best or worst, depending on how you look at things. And I think about poisoning a well, and I think back to what that meant in former times. To poison a well among a desert culture was a no-questions-asked capital offense. Sort of like you would hear in the 19th century out west in Texas. We hang horse thieves in these parts. Well, we hang well poisoners, too. Unless they're a coal company or a coal-burning power utility. And then we call it things like, oh, what? It's an act of God. Not hardly. So anyway, the folks down there can't drink their own water from their own wells because their wells are full of vile, toxic, poisonous heavy metals like, you know, arsenic, maybe some manganese, a soupçon of aluminum. Poison, 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 poison. Wonder how many people drank from their wells for the first 7 days when the EPA was silent. Oh, Bush EPA, who cannot you harm with your lackadaisical absence of human give a damn? Who? Sort of reminds me of September the 11th, 2001.
Yeah, y'all go on in there to the ground zero. Air's fine to breathe. You breathe a bunch of it, EPA says. Ah, it's all fine.
It wasn't fine. The air was not fine in New York City on September the 12th, 2001. And on the 30th day of December, 2008, EPA, not TVA, not the people that caused the problem. No, heck no. The Environmental Protection Agency administration, the Bush administration, EPA, finally said, you might not want to drink that stuff. So that's where it stands. But back before I realized that I was just doing personal broadcasting, because I figure as long as I can hear my voice in the headphones, y'all can hear it too. It's just magic that way. I ran through a little bit of math. A little bit of math indeed. Contemplating just exactly what we're talking about, trying to get my head around how much, because I'm not there and I can't see it. But as John Walton mentioned yesterday evening, there is heroic work being done by United Mountain Defense. UnitedMountainDefense.org. Stunning photographs, video there for your examination and perusal and appreciation. Go there. These people are doing tremendous work. Well, it turns out, based on TVA's own numbers, which I'm sure they're still fudging, that the TVA, on the day after the disaster, said the entire size of the, and we mentioned this last night, the entire size of the giant mountain of filth was 2.6 million cubic yards, and that only 1.8 million cubic yards had broken through the cheap little dirt dam that was already failing when it finally did fail.
Well, TVA just kind of had to revise themselves, and it's 5.3 million cubic yards.
Or more. So, courtesy of Dave Cooper, those of you who didn't see the article, he did the math for us. I'm always appreciative of anyone who will do math for me. There are 200 gallons in a cubic yard. So 5.3 million cubic yards comes to about 1.06 billion gallons.
And that is, in fact, 100. Not 50, like I originally said last week, but 100 times. Never trust me to do math. But 100 times the size of the Exxon Valdez spill. Mother. So there you are. 1.06 billion gallons. And what does that mean? We throw these, after 8 years of the Bush administration, we throw these millions and billions and jillions and tetrillions and quadrillions. We throw these things around like little bead necklaces off of the floats at Mardi Gras. Well, those numbers mean real things. And by way of introduction or by way of reference, what it boils down to, remember when I think it was our buddy David in Tennessee who helped us figure out that the Coalition for Provisional Authority in Iraq and L. Paul Bremer and all that crowd, they got $8 billion that they just lost in the sofa there at the CPA. But it had to get from here to there because I don't think there is a U.S. Mint in it at Baghdad International Airport. And so we figured out that those shrink-wrapped bundles, which the Republican thieves who were handling them called footballs, and literally played football with out on the tarmac, that to make up $8 billion worth of $100 bills would require 18 tractor trailer loads. Because you can get your, you know, you can count 18 tractor trailers when you're out on the highway. 18 tractor trailers equals $8 billion in $100 bills. Probably unmarked, as it turned out. So we're going to, let's use something like that. And in this case, let's not work with a semi, but a dump truck. Because that's what's going to be hauling this stuff. A dump truck holds 20 cubic yards of dirt and ash. Filth. Toxic, poisonous goo. 20 cubic yards. Well, at 20 cubes of cubic yards of goo per dump truck, it's going to take 265,000 dump truck loads to haul away the stuff they dumped. That means if they fill one dump truck, and this is a very conservative estimate, but if they go 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, if they do that, and they fill one dump truck every 5 minutes, it's going to take 2.5 years. 2.5 years to clean up everything that the TVA grossly, willfully, wantonly, negligently, and without regard to human well-being or human safety let go into the, what was it, the Emory River, the Clinch River, and the Tennessee River, and all over land all around it. Imagine goo piled higher than a diesel locomotive car. Diesel locomotive engine. Imagine that. That's how high it got piled in spots and maybe higher. In the last week or so, it's safe to assume that there's been babies born in that area. There will be babies born who will not know anything but a toxic world before their third birthday. Can you imagine that? Babies starting preschool, kindergarten, Head Start. And no, honey, it didn't always look like that. One time it was real pretty country. Till the TVA destroyed it. And the effects will linger for perhaps decades. There may well be children born in the last week and in the weeks to come who won't see high school graduation because
a multimillionaire by the name of Tom Kilgore, the administrator of the Tennessee Valley Authority. While he was bringing down his $2.4 million a year and getting his incentive bonus of, what, $1.4 million, $1.8 million, who knows, didn't have time to consider the impacts of the dirty mountaintop removal, mostly coal, that rides on rail cars out of West Virginia and arrives somewhere, and, you know, and Virginia and Kentucky and Tennessee, and arrives in places like Roane County, Tennessee. We do not even begin to have the first inkling of the impact. And that is maddening. And they can't drink the water. I'm past screaming with something like that. Water. I think about desert cultures where poisoning a well was a capital offense. It's not even not a capital offense for somebody like Tom Kilgore. It's not an offense at all. Whoops, the ash dump. Well, you know, these things happen. Act of God, you know. But you know what? Thanks to folks like John Walton, thanks to United Mountain Defense, thanks to Dave Cooper, thanks to the countless folks who are down there keeping some sort of an eye on this situation while the for-profit media doesn't. America might not be able to turn such a blind eye to it. So that's a starting place for this evening. And just to let you know, I checked the main news site of CNN. Let's see. Top stories tonight. NASA details final seconds for Columbia. Defiant Blagojevich makes Senate pick. Gaza relief boat rammed by Israeli vessel. Oh, that's going to be a fun one to get to. Olmert airstrikes blockade first stage in Gaza. Oh, yeah. First stage blockade. I don't know. First down blockade. Genocide to go. Where are you, Mr. President? Gina Six figure tried suicide. Yeah, we can go all the way down through the list. Not a word, not a word, not a word about the ongoing horror. Where are you, Anderson Cooper? Where are you? Oh, that's right. CNN got paid millions and millions of dollars by the clean coal pals. Whoopsie, there goes the journalistic ethics. Oh, darn the luck. So that's our starting place for this evening. We'll take a quick break and come back. Your phone calls, of course, are always welcome. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your own nickel, locally 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. It's all ever so easy. Because this is conversation radio. And this is listener supported. This is The Horn.
What has happened down here? Is the wind have changed? Clouds roll in from the north and it starts to rain. Rained real hard, and it rained for a real long time. 6 feet of water in the streets of Evangeline. River rose all day, the river rose all night. Some people got lost in the flood. Some people got away all right. River
never have busted through, lay down a flag of mine. 6 feet of water in the streets of Dandelion, Louisiana, Louisiana. That tide will wash us away, that tide will wash us away. Louisiana, they're trying to wash us away, they're trying to wash us away. President Cooley's come down to the railroad train, a little fat man with a notepad in his hand. President say, little fat man, you need a shame. But the river has done best for Crackers Lane. Louisiana, Louisiana, they're trying to wash us away, they're trying to wash us away. Louisiana, Louisiana, they're trying to wash us away.
Not exactly spot on geographically, but daggum if it's not spot on spiritually and realistically. And of course, bear in mind, some of this stuff's going to wind up in Louisiana. East Tennessee, Lower Ninth Ward. Yeah, it's all just places George Bush can't be. Yeah, guy's still on vacation. The Israelis have declared genocide on the Gazans. George Bush still on vacation. Worst environmental disaster perhaps in American history in East Tennessee. George Bush still on vacation. You know, he's trying to get those, I don't know, maybe he thinks that he's got vacation days on the presidency that he won't get paid for if he doesn't use them before he leaves office. I don't know. Vacation boy president. Jesus, how much horror has that man vacationed through? It's stunning, isn't it? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, it's geographically relevant to me. I'm just about 60 miles east there.
Well, there you go.
Of Louisiana, not the Tennessee River.
Right. Hey, Kate.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
I wait all night for calls like these.
Long time, first time. this is not, you know, I always listen at work. I mean, I try to always listen at work and then go home because I don't have that good connection at home. And it only takes a half an hour to get home, and just cried the whole way home yesterday after listening to John. That was just And since I don't do television, I don't know what everybody's not knowing, you know.
This is one of those cases where not doing television, it really doesn't impact your ability. You got more last night, Kate, than the vast majority of America has gotten in a week from the television.
I'd been following the story, so a lot of it wasn't new except for his statistics, and that was just, when I saw the first picture, I thought, oh, shit, here we go again. I loved all of his visuals, the going down, up and down the river, and
How's that for a new word? Ashburg.
Just the tip. Oh, God.
And filthy all the way, filthy and poisonous all the way to the bottom.
It's not turtles all the way down anymore. It's
You see the little baby catfishes in the Tennessee River? Mother, our bottom feeding refuse doesn't taste good anymore. The fish poo we eat every day of our lives doesn't taste right.
Carp, barbecued carp, ain't even worth eating anymore, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, God. And I know there's probably a lot of people trying to get in tonight, so I wanted to just keep this. when I think it was you and Albert talking about Paradigm Shift last night,
mm-hmm.
and it's got to break, and it's got to break. It's got to break. You know, that old break the eggs to make the omelet. I'm not interested in omelets, but...
Marilyn Monroe's last, very last movie, I think, was called Something's Got to Give.
Oh, yeah? Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's this. Something's Got to Give.
I thought it was Some Like It Hot.
No.
That wasn't her last movie?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, anyway, as I was frying rice to eat with my salmon.
Mm-mm.
when Albert was saying, talking about the paradigm shift, and I'm smart mouth that I am, it just popped into my head. Yeah, the pair is going to break and the drop. It's breaking. It is. We're shifting, and it's shifting really fast, and the cracks are running across the windshield faster than we can plug them up in the parking lot with those drive-up window windshield.
Yeah, and what did I see earlier today? The seismologists have noted something like 250 tremors in Yellowstone in the past not very long.
Uh-huh, feeling them all over my body. I feel like I've been run over by a truck. And, oh, God. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on all over the globe. There's a big volcano up in Alaska, and, oh, God.
Don't say Alaska. Don't do that to me.
Why?
Well, no, I'm Alaska to death lately. Just
why?
Because of the political season.
Oh, that.
Yeah, I almost can't hear the word without this. I had to stop myself from making some snarky comment about that woman.
Oh, well, the volcano was a long ways away from her.
Damn.
Was it?
See?
Well, anyway, and I wanted to just, I'm not poking a stick at you, so don't just settle yourself down. But the thing that when I'm talking about it, it's like the motor's stopping, as in Atlas Shrugged.
Yes.
Don't make any editorial comments. I like the plot.
You see how people push me around? What other talk host out there lets his listeners push him around like this? Don't make an editorial comment, Bob. Yeah.
Well, because I've heard them all before, and they bore me because the motors, it's just, it's so big, and I wanted to, I follow a discussion group online, have since like 98 before the Y2K rollover, and it's called Time Bomb 2000. And there's somebody from Washington started a thread in the discussion group, and it's a public discussion group. It's not, you don't have to be a member to log on. He started a thread of oh God, this and then that and then this, and this came out of the England, and he links everything to the news story. And I think there's probably 38,000 hits on that one particular thread right now. And it was called Layoff Shockwaves. And if anybody was interested in going on to Time Bomb 2000 or Time Bomb 2K, I can't remember, and just, it's on, I think it's probably on the second page. It's either going to be on the first or second page. And just start scrolling through and skim reading those stories. And it won't take long for your eyes to start bleeding. It's just horrible. And I was listening to about layoffs and cutbacks and bankrupts and things that are happening around the globe. And I was listening to the trucking radio station out of Cincinnati last night. And they were talking about the freight. We're just not moving any freight in this country because the rail cars are parked or mothballed, or the rail car company in Texas is going bankrupt, or they're laying off many, 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 and the trucks aren't hauling loads, and the freighters are docked, and we're just, and even the thing that struck me before I fell asleep was that Schneider Trucking Company has closed down their driver training school. That was one of the best schools in the country. You know, those big orange trucks with the courteous drivers that drive the speed limit and they let you in, or they are the best outfit on the road. I used to know some drivers, and they are just so good. They've closed their training school. I think it's in Tennessee or Kentucky or someplace, maybe. I can't remember. Anyway, they closed the school. But anyway, the thing that struck me when I was reading through this, we had some long time off this week, and I thought, I had not gone onto that site because I thought, oh God, layoffs, who cares? I mean, me. I volunteer. They can't even fire me. So I was going reading through it, and I thought, you know, everything around me, everything in my life, everything in my vision, everything in my imagination is being affected, like, you know, vacuum hoses and fuses and field peas and adhesive for post-it notes and lug nuts and cereal. And I mean, the list is just, it's huge.
Yes, it is.
Train AC company is going out of business. I mean, they've laid off many big percentage of people, the Train heat and air conditioning manufacturers. The yarn plant in Athens, Georgia is cutting back big time. So there goes our underwear and our T-shirts, our, you know, socks.
Nah, we can still get some Chinese ones.
Not really, because they're not shipping them out.
Well, then... I mean,
yeah, that's... Yeah, that's yeah. Okay. And
I know.
And
I know.
Another one that just made me wanna yeah, whatever. I mean, I'm working into hyperbole here. Is the Diamond Chain Company up in Indianapolis, one of my mother's hometown, up in Indy. They make everything from copy machines to oil rigs. But they're cutting back. I mean, they're just like cutting back until, you know, pretty soon they're not going to have any. Buddy to do the work and do the manufacturing. And, oh, God. And another, in closing, I mean, let's just get too grim. The price of metal is dropping off really big time. So if anybody thinks, well, shit, I can just always sell scrap metal in tin cans. I have a...
No, ain't nobody buying that either.
I have a lady here who her only means of living is collecting tin cans, and she goes out at 10 and at 2, collects cans and brings them to her back porch, and then a neighbor guy from her church takes them over to the can place and cashes them in, and that's her income for the month. Lest anybody think they can do that. Even the scrappers and the canners can't afford the gas to take their loads in to the recycle places. I mean, they dropped the money. The price of metal is dropping so badly.
Well, we've almost, there's a wonderful recycling program in Charleston, West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
that has recycled everything under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, paper, plastic, glass, metal, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're being saved right now by the skin of their teeth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's buying the stuff that they mm-hmm. collect. And they're not even necessarily paying a bunch to people. You know, they're paying money to people who bring stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't get it off their hands, and it's turning into mounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. So when you bring in a shopping cart full of metal, they can't give you any money for it because they ain't got no money to give you.
Right.
The bringing this around in a circle. The point is that the cracks are running across the windshield, really. And it's very frightening. And some things are going on around here that are just, like, way, way too big. Somebody's husband works at Ingalls Shipyard, and I said, well, what happens when, oh, no, his job's secure because there's only two of him. There's him and another guy, and they have to be in the yard at all times. And I said, oh, okay, but fine. What happens when the ships decide they can't afford to be repaired? They're not, nobody's building ships, nobody... What happens to him then? Oh, well, I said, well, okay. You know, I mean, people, I guess I'm just using this to vent because people aren't paying any attention. It just can't happen to us. It can't happen to me. Don't worry about it. Somebody today, do you want me to order 3 boxes from Angel Food Ministries this month? Because we have a few more days before we have to get the order in. Well, what do you mean? I said, how many canned goods do you have in your house? How much food's in the freezer? Well, I mean, it's not that bad. Okay, fine. Oh, God, Kate, okay, you're so negative. You always have, don't you know that worry is the work of the devil? I said, I reckon. Oh, damn. So, I guess my question to you.
A smile is just a frown turned upside down.
Oh, God. My question to you is, how is this any different than what happened in the plot of Atlas Shrugged?
No, because I've already been told I can't editorialize on that god-awful thing.
I'm asking you a question. What's different about what the conditions are now and how the plot line of...
Well, what's different is that Ayn Rand said it was going to be all the moochers?
Mm-hmm.
And that the moochers were going to be the working people who wanted to be paid a fair living wage for their labor. They were the moochers.
Yeah, I give you that. I don't. That's not what I wanted.
I know. Well, work with me here.
Something more esoteric.
I can't say my name in under 2 minutes. Work with me.
Okay, I'm shutting up. I guess I'll just light up the smoke and let you go. It's your show.
Now, don't go all Bugs Bunny on me. Okay, I know when to shut up. And you don't have to tell me twice to shut up. I'm shutting up. See me? I'm shutting up. I'm shutting up now. I'm shutting up.
I'm done.
And that's when Yosemite Sam says, shut up, shutting up. But you know, so those were the people that working people were the people that she portrayed as the moochers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out the moochers are actually the highly driven Type A personalities that she tried to turn into heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that is profound because there are millions, if not the American Literary Society or I don't know who they are, but they put together this book of this list of the 100 most influential pieces of literature in the 20th century, right?
Mm-hmm.
That god awful slog through tome doesn't appear anywhere on it, but it's in the top five of the list that ordinary folks make. It changed my life. I don't know what it is they like about it. The sex scenes that are like literary renditions of bobcats doing it in the woods. But anyway, it turns out that the people she was proposing and that lots of people have swallowed whole as being the heroes of this society are actually the privateers and the pirates who are menacing the hull below the waterline of our ship of state. And that is profound. How's it any different? It's different because it's not the working people that she said would bring the economy to a halt. It's the people who have stolen us blind. It's the people who stole us blind under the pretense of being rugged individualists lifting themselves up by their own libertarian bootstraps, who are the ones who've actually caused all this. You know, Tom Kilgore is the administrator of the Tennessee Valley Authority, and as we went over last night, is hauling down $2.4 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now that he's a self-starting go-getter, horse feathers.
No, I see those people as the moochers.
Right, but they're not the ones who are portrayed in that book as being the moochers.
I know. Okay. What's
not different, which is where I think you were going, what's not different is that stuff is grinding to a halt.
Thank you. That's the point I was trying to
make. I got that early on, but the thing that I think is most noteworthy is that stuff is grinding to a halt, not because of anything she suggested, but because of the very antithesis. Because we let that woman's hateful little philosophy infect our government and our public life and our system, our business systems, because we let that happen, what she predicted has come to pass.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should have not mentioned Rand because I didn't want it to inform my conversation with you. I should have used something besides the motor grinding to a halt. But that's my visual of what's happening in.
We can work with another image. Let's work with the idea of sabotage.
Yeah.
Okay, a French word. Which refer, and we're going back to motors grinding to a halt, unless I'm mistaken, refers to workers who, disgusted with their working conditions, would take off their wooden shoes,
mm-hmm.
their sabots,
mm-hmm.
that was shoes, wasn't it, and throw them into the machine, and the machine would grind to a halt.
Grind to a halt, yep. Mm-hmm.
Only in this case, once again, it's not the workers, it's the people who are who drive the workers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people who really are the moochers of this society, who, what's the book say about consider the lilies and the birds of the field? they neither tarry nor they listeth.
Yeah.
You know, what is really, honest to God, if you let me go job shadow this creep for a couple of days, what does Tom Kilgore do for a living?
Oh, I don't think they do anything. They just make money.
You know, what did Bernie Madoff do for a living?
Oh, I don't know, but I hear he was going to plead insanity. He's 70 years old and maybe didn't know everything he was doing. That's the last I heard.
Well, the funny thing about the insanity defense is it's terribly, terribly difficult to mount, unless you're stinking rich, because I'll bet he's still got the money, even though all the everything went bust. He's still got the money to hire the best lawyers money can buy. Just as, you know, it's such a, one of those funny little, well, not funny, not, nothing funny about it, sleazy little things about the way our government works, especially in our criminal law. Bernie Madoff will have plenty of money to pay lawyers to, get him some sort of a booby hatch plea. All right. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if a guy is charged with dealing crack, the feds will go in so hard that if the man did have any money, they'll trail the money all the way to his defense lawyer, take the fee away from the defense lawyer, and make sure that the guy can't get an adequate defense at law by handing him some public defender, who either, got out of law school 2 days ago,
or is
so overworked as to barely be able to learn the defendant's name.
Yes, everything is. Oh, all men are created equal. That's for sure. What I want to segue. There's no way to segue into this, but let me backtrack for a minute. For anybody who thinks it's not as bad as you think it is, please just go look up Time Bomb 2000 and go to the first or second page in the discussion group and check out the layoff shockwaves and just scroll through that. About 700 posts, and just scroll through and see how bad it's happening. And once you get a sense of that, it's time to start gathering and hunting and gathering and taking care of business. You know, where's your water? Where's your food?
That's the question we don't seem to have an answer to. When we get to that, where's your water? Mm-hmm. And you know, there aren't any stories coming out of this disaster in East Tennessee about Walmart suddenly getting humane and sending truckloads of water.
Nope, not at all. Not at all. And if you think it can't happen to you, just please go log into that discussion and just read for like a half an hour. Just set aside some time and just read and just see if it can't happen to you and how close it's really happening to you at home and you're not seeing it in the media. Not seeing it. But when it's the distilled essence of what's happening, of the motor grinding down, is what just shocked me. It didn't shock me, but it just made my eyes bleed, if you will. And I wanted to segue into my Dixie for Dummies segment tonight. I wondered how many people, down here they all do it, but I wondered how many people who talk like me do Black Eyed Peas, and it's getting to be Hoppin' John season, and I just wondered how many people and what other.
Well, see, you're making so much progress. You know what Hoppin' John is.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, but I don't do the pig thing. I've been known to eat, I just eat Black Eyed Peas and rice, and that's just it. I mean, I have anything to put on it, like I've even gone so far as to put Worcestershire sauce on it just to make my body think it's eating meat, you know.
Put some Worcestershire sauce on one of them Waverly wafers, and it tastes just like prime rib.
Just like Hoppin' John. Yeah, for sure. I'll get out of here with the thing. I learned that down here. But I think
I'm just playing.
So I just wondered, and then they all eat cabbage down here because it's, and I think the tradition for that goes back to that the green leaves reminded people of money, and so that was for prosperity, and the Black Eyed Peas that came from the West Indies and from Africa up into here were for good luck, and that has a whole, God, that.
Well, see, I don't tempt fate. We do them both. We do the Black Eyed Peas and the cabbage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or the any kind of greens. It don't matter. But my favorite. But see, you can't always do that. You just think you got it. You think you got it all locked up, and you're going to just do the black eyed peas. My favorite black eyed story is when I was on the road going to Alaska in the early 80s, and driving the highway in my brand new pickup, and I at White Horse Yukon, it was way below zero, and then the wind came up on the way on into Alaska, and when I got to Beaver Creek, Yukon, driving 45 miles an hour on the highway with the temperature out and the wind out, it was a wind chill was about 84 below. And so it was just kind of cold. It was the day of the first of January, and I needed to get the peas eaten before midnight. And so I knew where I was going to stop for the night, and I had the peas. I took them out of I had them behind the seat, and I put them up under the heater vent, which didn't do squat good. And so they weren't frozen. And I got the motel room and went in and drew a sink full of hot water and put the can in the sink. And then I kept heating the water up. But it had to leave the truck running, of course, because it would freeze in about 10 minutes. It was so cold that the brake fluid was getting slushy and the power steering fluid was kind of slushy. So I had like very little brakes and very little power steering. I mean, springtime's coming. We're going to have break up here any time now. Anyway, so the peas.
I love it when the rotors bloom in the spring.
Well, I was so cold, and I mean, I wasn't that cold, but I was so tired from just being at 45 miles an hour through endless miles of absolutely breathtaking beauty, and I needed to get some sleep, and I couldn't wait for the peas to get warm, so I just opened them up with my P38, my can, my key ring that I still have, and I just sat in the middle of the bed wrapped up in my sleeping bag eating black-eyed peas out of a can in 84 below weather outside.
Well, in 84 below, those peas were probably warm.
they were pretty warm compared to outside, but I always thought that, you know, we'd go to any lengths to get these damn midnights coming. I got to get these peas down before I go to sleep. I don't know. I'm not going to push my luck out here on the Alaskan highway.
No. I mean, the need every bit of help you can get. Look, mm-hmm. Find the loophole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although, I got to tell you, we had our black-eyed peas and cabbage on January 1st, 2008, and didn't seem to help a lot. But, who knows what would have happened had we not.
I was going to say, you're relatively healthy. The family's relatively healthy. You're all standing upright, I presume. I haven't heard anything different. the mic is still hot. Well, anyway, I'm not even sure after the motor winding down and the paradigm shifting, I really won't even get into the money thing tonight, but it's just going to happen. And if you got $10, send it. You got $5, send it. You got PayPal, hit it again. I don't know. Pay period's coming up again if you get paid on Social Security Day on the 3rd, if the eagle craps like it does on me on the 3rd, just send some more money because we're not going to have a hot mic very much longer. See what it was like when we were sitting, we're all sitting around waiting. We're just all waiting. Is Bob live tonight? What's going on? I mean, where's Bob?
Bob can't drive his computer tonight. But right.
That's right. Well, that's beside the point. But see.
No, you really can't overstate the value of competence, Kate.
Well, I wasn't going to go there, Bob. You've already had a bad
I'm night. Living there. My sleeping bag stays rolled out on incompetence.
Well, I just wanted to remind everybody that if you think it can't happen to you, go log on to Time Bomb 2000. And if you think we're going to have a hot mic for the rest of our lives, you're mistaken. And it's getting grim out here. And I don't know. I just wanted to hear people's black eyed peas stories. So. I'm going to move over and let somebody else take the mic and
Okay, we'll see if there's any more Black Eyed Peas out there.
Yeah. I can't even think of a good song to bump me out with, but the last one just about broke my heart. So, anyway, signing off from Dixie, and I'll check you all later. I'll get you in the next decade. No, the next year. Next year, right?
Well, no, I'll be here tomorrow night, too. 30 days have September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31, and nobody knows what to make rhyme with February.
Okay.
So I'm here tomorrow night.
I don't even know what month it is. I just move from one day to the next. Anyway, okay, well, catch you tomorrow night then.
All right, take care, Kate.
Take care.
Bye now.
Take my call.
Oh, always
Bye.
A pleasure. Bye. Thanks for making it. And we'll just keep things rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
I'm just calling up to ruin your nice buzzkill that Kate gave you. Well, I figured.
I wish I, well, you know, no, when I screw up like this, where's the buzz?
Well, I don't know. I think anybody has this, what I'm about to do ought to kill it. This is a, may I read a couple of selected quotes from an article that came out on the 25th?
Squirtingly.
Says, the headline says, Tennessee sludge dump, water safe according to initial tests.
That's like when you turn the hot water tap on, it's usually cold at first.
Yeah. Says environmentalists worry the ash-laden sludge that coated a Tennessee neighborhood when a power plant dike burst could pose a health risk, although initial tests by a public utility company have shown no threat to drinking water. Okay.
Yeah, nice.
You get further down into the article.
Oh, well, yeah, at one point, y'all can just boil that water and it'll be fine.
Yeah, and it says, officials at the Tennessee Valley Authority have said preliminary tests suggest there is no danger to millions of people who get their drinking water from the 652-mile-long Tennessee River. In other words, the very people who caused this are now saying it's safe.
Right. But that was also back when they were saying, oh, well, you know, we only dumped 1.8 million cubic yards. But now it's up to 5.6.
That was my other quote. They said the cleanup is making progress and that they were bringing in 30 pieces of equipment and they had more than 100 workers for the work that would take 4 to 6 weeks.
I know. Isn't it precious?
Now, what I want to know is, are they providing hazmat suits for those guys?
That would be no. At least not. I'm guessing, but I would say that would be no.
Yeah, well, you and me both. Are they going to provide money for their health problems, which are going to...
Are you kidding? It's Tennessee. That would be workers' comp. I mean, you know.
In other words, they're going to get the same thing that the first responders.
Yes.
Ground Zero got.
Yeah, Bupkis.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess that's one of them highfalutin northern words, Bupkis, for not a damn thing.
Yeah. The good thing is all of the comments on this particular article, not a one of them is believing it.
Who in their right mind would?
And they're all saying, I love one comment. This one you're going to love. It's, quote, I heard Bob Corker is going to drink some water and then he'll let the citizens know if it's safe. And somebody else posted in and said, laugh out loud. We here's hoping he grows a set.
Probably grow a baby's arm coming out of his head, but never mind. Oh, that's just
yeah. That's what you know. That really, really bothers me. Nobody is addressing the fact that with the amount of lead, the amount of mental retardation that is going to be showing up in these children.
Yeah, lead, mercury. You know.
It's good.
And, you know, enough arsenic, you know, funny, everything tastes like almonds. No, or is that cyanide?
That's cyanide.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, Monroe, as well as Clark Gable, made their last movie in the same one. It was The Misfits.
Ah, that's the last release movie, but she was filming Something's Got to Give when she checked out.
Ah, yes, that's true. That's true. It was she never finished it.
But it was technically her last movie.
Yeah. You are right there. Chalk one up for Bob there.
I don't just say things, Susan.
Yes, I understand. But, you know, I don't understand why the rest of the country, you know, I put in a comment that was censored.
Bleep.
I'm afraid I got rather rough. I didn't include one swear word. I just said, hey, this is part of an ecological time bomb that's been ticking down here due to mountaintop removal and the so-called coal industry. And how do you like it, guys? And then I double-spaced and then I put boom.
Yeah.
Apparently they figured that was a threat.
Or just not civil enough.
Well, guess what, guys? It's going to happen.
Well, you know, it's like our buddy Reverbo says, make it personal.
Yeah. What are they going to say when the dam at Marsh Fork goes?
Or
because it's gonna.
Sure, they're all gonna. They're designed to go. The theory, though, is that they'll stay in place long enough for the people who are making literally a killing at it. To live their life, shuffle off this mortal coil, and have their hearse followed to the gravesite with a U-Haul.
Oh, God. I just, there is a site. Let me see if I've still got it on my email. Where people can go and ask questions of the Obama campaign. And get an answer, because they opened it up again. They had closed it. Now they've opened it up again. Now.
Well, you know, and question one is, how do you like this latest one George has handed you?
Okay, here it is, people. You can go sign into this and start asking questions. Here's the URL. It's http://change.gov/open-for-questions. And that gets you to a site where you can put in questions direct to the transition team. Start bombarding it.
Not a bad idea at all. Not a bad
this
idea.
Gets you directly to the transition team.
Yeah, change.gov.
Indirectly.
Well, I hope somebody's paying attention to it.
I have seen that some of these questions have been answered by, among other people, but you don't expect Obama to answer them. At least not, and sign his name. But I have seen answers that were signed by Pluff. Axelrod.
Yeah.
So they are paying attention.
Well, then it's time to get on and start asking those questions.
So people, hit that address.
Change.gov.
Yeah, change.gov/open-for-questions. Sign it and make your question known. You know, be very respectful. Say, hey, what about mountaintop removal and what it's done to places like Tennessee and all of the other places where these sludge dams are going to kill people?
And in the meantime, I realize that he hasn't said a whole lot about the thing in Gaza. But he did make a statement today about the proposed, not proposed, but the appointment that Blagojevich made for his replacement in the Senate. But still no statement about this ecological disaster in East Tennessee.
Yeah.
I'm not comforted by that.
No, I'm not either. So that we need to bring it to his attention. Start screaming, folks. I already have.
Screaming's good sometimes, Susan.
Now, you can scream quite nicely and, you know, respectfully, but, you know, it's still a scream. And you can, you know, say, hey.
Well, I'm still waiting for somebody to swoop into East Tennessee from the for-profit only media and do more than 90 seconds.
Yeah. Or for that matter, just ask Obama, are you willing to Marine One and fly over Kaford Mountain?
Well, you know, it leaves Washington, fly over Kaford, and then go on down to East Tennessee and see that. And that way you see the beginning of the process and the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
His safety is never compromised. All he's got to do is open his eyes and look. Bingo.
Hope so. Susan, thanks a million.
No problem.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Absolutely.
Okay.
We'll do.
Bye
now. Change.gov, and you'll find there the link to the next page you're looking for. And go ahead and mention it, because most of the people who are actually deeply involved in this are actually, you know, folks on the ground there trying to assess conditions. They might not have internet service, so you'll just have to help out a little bit. Can we do that? It'd be nice if we could. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
I have a few things that I want, a couple of questions I wanted to ask you. One of them I've forgotten, but and a few things to say. And I'm trying not to take too long.
That's all right.
But I want to ask you, I didn't get to hear very much of your program last night. My son, he heard part of it, and his understanding was that there was like a plant there, and there, the stuff that goes out, they got it to go under the plant and go underground, so it doesn't look like it's coming.
They're trying to loop it around behind the plant before it goes back out into the Tennessee.
And he said then that way it wouldn't look like it was them doing it or something.
Well, not necessarily. No, it just wouldn't look like it's as bad as it is.
Yeah. Well, I saw some pictures, I'll tell you. Looked pretty bad to me.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of hard to pretty this up.
Yeah. And I'd like to know how anybody else would like to have that happen to them. But, you know, that's the way it goes. They don't think that way. But one thing that they said in one of the articles, I guess it's the EPA people. Is that who's in charge, EPA?
Well, Tennessee Valley Authority, EPA, got
from the government.
Well, the TVA and EPA are from the government.
Anyway, they were saying, talking about all the dead fish, said probably that had no effect. They probably froze to death.
Yeah, because there was a real cold snap and fish freeze to death in it. Yeah.
Gosh.
Because, you know, it's completely different fish than the kind that swim under the ice, you know, up where they ice fish in Minnesota and Wisconsin and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, those warm-tempered southern carp and catfish and brim and bass and stuff, they can't stand that cold weather.
Oh, okay.
Not.
And I wanted to ask you, did you get those pictures I sent you?
Yes, I did.
Isn't he beautiful?
He's lovely. I think he's a pit bull.
Yeah, I do too. Well, we had to get a home for him because I don't have a big place for him, and he's very vivacious, let's put it that way.
Yes.
And I think we found a good home. There was the people that got a big yard fenced in and kind of out in the country.
Well, that's wonderful.
Good old boy, you know. Good old boy, good old woman.
Well,
them are great.
He had a friendly dog face.
Very, very loving. But I think it was a puppy. You know, he got out.
Well, yeah, he didn't look. He didn't look like he had all his growth.
Yeah, he just was so sweet. You know, and I would have loved to have kept him. But my cats, they were gone, and one of them around until yesterday. So, but anyway, I just wanted to bring you up.
Well, I'm glad he got a good home, though. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. I mean, everybody had a good feeling about it. My son handled it, and the neighbor, and he's a dog person, too. He's got, like, four big dogs that lives in the house. And he got to where he helped me every time the dog got loose, you know, because the dog would always come in through the holes in the floor.
Oh, my.
Where the cats come in.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Probably looking for the cats.
He was looking for me. He loved me. But I wanted to. Okay.
Yeah?
You heard Bush is really upset about Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
You heard that?
What? Huh?
There's some of his people that worked with him, so that was one of his biggest heartaches or something.
I didn't catch that, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, it's on the look on Buzzsplash. I think it's on there, and I think they've got like a little film of it too. But if he's so, why don't he do something? He can do something now. I mean, yeah, that's just so stupid. People fall for that. That he, you know, that bothers him. It don't bother him.
No.
But,
and the funny thing is, where East Tennessee is concerned, those are people who overwhelmingly voted for him in the last election and voted for McCain.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, he's a Bush and he don't give a damn about anybody.
Uh-uh.
Pardon my mouth.
Well, you know, it's definite, pretty definite that Jeb is going to run for Martinez. Seat.
Yes, I saw
the one that had to spend time with his family.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, and then another.
Yeah, and remember, Mel Martinez Mel Martinez is also the same guy who crafted the memo saying we need to really exploit the Terry Schiavo tragedy because it'll make the Democrats look bad.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Here's the quote. Yeah, okay. I'm getting this via the chat room. That somebody on his staff said Katrina and his response was the start of his downfall.
Yeah. Well, he could still respond.
Oh, I'm thinking the start of his downfall was the day he took office, but that's me.
Day he was born, I think. But then another thing I wanted to say about, I heard Rick Warren. I listened to him. I didn't see the first part of it, but it was obviously after he and Melissa Etheridge had gotten together. It was some big convention or something.
Oh yeah, they've made nicey and they're real big chums now.
Yeah. Anyway, I listened to him because I'd never listened to him before, and I found out that he says that he gives 95% of his income to away. I don't know if he said to the Lord or not.
Oh, yeah, and he doesn't take a salary anymore.
Right.
And he lives on beans and cornbread.
Made so much money off the book.
Right.
And another thing he said, well, this is just making it smaller. He said jobs are the answer for poverty. Well, that's not always true. There are a lot of people who are not able to work. There are a lot of little children don't have a family.
Yep.
A job for them. Is that the answer?
Yep. Repeal those child labor laws now.
Yeah. And,
isn't he just sickening?
I just don't. I'm sure a lot of people like that, but I don't like that when they got those pat answers, you know. And that one really stuck out to me, though, the two. And the 95% of the income, you know, he really drug that out about how they started with 10 and then they went to blah blah and you know went on. And I'm recalling in the Bible it says, Jesus said, if you give to be seen of man, what reward have you? If you give in secret, your Father in heaven will reward you openly. And not to be like the hypocrites where they blew bugles and all like that when they went about putting their tithe in.
Oh, growing up in the Baptist church, they didn't have bugles, but I know some people who...
Well, that's my little thing. He did say blow trumpets, didn't he?
I do believe so. And, you know, that goes hand in glove with the idea of if you've got something to say, go pray in secret, because the Pharisees pray loudly in the streets and they have their reward.
But him is saying, I mean, it's nice that somebody's able to do that. I wish I could give 95% of my income away. But, you know, and God knows I kind of tried in a way. But, you know, when you've got plenty, it's like the little widow, you know. She gave her mite, and Jesus said she gave more than all the rest. And his disciples said, what do you mean? She only gave so much. He said, well, she gave all she had. So, you know, but this talking about it, giving 95% of his income, well, I'm glad he's able to do that. But where does it go? Who's it helping?
And we don't know. I mean, that's the thing. We don't know.
He did say he didn't like a television evangelist. He did say that he doesn't like them.
Well,
I know.
The kettle said, I don't like pots.
Yeah. By the way, The View is getting very boring, and it's the reruns all this week.
Well, and it will be till the new year starts out, but it'll start ramping up good once Congress comes back into session. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It'll be at a fever pitch by the time the inauguration comes around.
Okay. Well, there was another question I had, but I forgot what.
Well,
it was.
Just send it right along when you remember it, and we'll get to that too. Okay.
It was probably more important than anything else I asked, but I'd just like to present, you know, my point of view about Rick Warren. I mean, I just don't care for that. You know, somebody's got all the answers.
Well, you know, it was Frank Rich in the New York Times who said that Obama's response to the outcry over Rick Warren. When Obama said, well, we can disagree without being disagreeable. Frank Rich said it perfectly. He said that was too cute by half. And using the word cute, perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did think of another question, but I won't.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
You were talking about Obama. Okay, now, if I had married someone from overseas, and say I went to their country, and my baby was born over there, and my baby automatically a citizen of the country I'm a citizen of?
Your baby has an opportunity for American citizenship. However, under the Constitution, the baby can't be president. Because there's more than just being president. And now Alan Keyes, you know, that crazy... he's got him a new lawsuit out. And
what kind?
Oh, you know, Obama will be an illegitimate president because if he is found to not be a citizen and is removed from office and his election is void, then all of his life, blah, 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 give that man his daggum medicine.
He used to be kind of a good speaker, but he just got crazier and crazier.
Oh, he's a wonderful speaker to this day, but from the first time he opened his mouth, he was just...
When he's the talk, so...
Yeah, but he's nuts. He's just nuts.
He is. He really is.
I've disowned my daughter, for she is a lesbian. I always thought of Alan Keyes as he's got a little bit, I don't know, he's got some part of the, when you listen to him speak, he's got a little bit of the Paul Harvey gene going for him, but never mind.
I don't like him either.
Good day. Juanita, have yourself a wonderful evening.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye now. Calling from Central Florida, our View correspondent, Juanita. And rolling right along, several blinking lights here, but we'll march right through them. Hey, welcome to the program. Ah, doggone it. All right, let's try this one. Hey, come on, guys. All right, am I having... No, I can't be having phone problems. Can I? Hold on. No? Come on. You quit. Now, see, I had five lights going blinky, blinky, blinky. I know people that they'll wait for hours. But, you know, never mind. You'll have that sometimes. Let's, okay, we'll try this one and see if it works. Hey, welcome to the program.
This one work?
That one works.
Very good. Just thought I'd test. How are you?
I'm well, Dave. How about you?
Oh, not so bad. It's been an interesting couple of days in the Middle East, shall we say?
Yeah, it has. It, well, interesting.
lack of response from your prospective leader, Guy Feinstein.
Yeah.
Words on that one.
Let's see. Well, what was the? We only have one president at a time. So, you know, sort of putting it back to Bush. And you know, Bush is the one who should be responding.
He should be, but to for something like that to pretty much say no comment, I think is kind of...
Well, you know, after all, it's only Palestinians, and they're not even real people.
Exactly.
I mean, they don't have real babies or real lives. Or they don't, you know, they don't have real blood flowing out of their veins and all over the pavement. No. I mean, if it was real people, the United States wouldn't be providing real helicopters to go and really blow them up. I mean, would we?
It's just beyond belief. It's beyond belief. You know, there's just so much going on.
Yeah, and there's been lots of photographs out of Gaza, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the man carrying his blown-up son. And it kind of sticks with me.
The thing is,
but you know, how dare that little non-human Palestinian get in the way of that that Israeli Hellfire rocket built in the United States? How dare he?
Could have got blood on it or something, you know. It's just to call this a kind of measured response to a few amateur-built rockets is just insanity. And
that's not to excuse that's not to excuse firing rockets.
No, absolutely not.
Because you know those things are heinous enough in their own right because they don't have any guidance system on them.
But the point there is, it's called asymmetrical warfare for a reason. It's so damn asymmetrical because you've got probably one of the best equipped, best practiced armies in the world going into civilian areas with the kind of stuff they're going in with.
Well, but it's the Palestinians' fault because those Hamas terrorists, they hide among the civilians, so we got to kill the civilians to get through to them. It's kind of like how you got to mow down the nice grass to get the crabgrass out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard it before. I heard it when Israel went into Lebanon, a couple of summers ago?
Mm-hmm.
Well, shame on them for hiding in civilian areas. Well, shame on you for shooting into civilian areas.
But how do you make a terrorist? It's really easy.
Shoot into civilian areas.
All their rights. You take away every aspect of a reasonable life. You leave them to stew with no chance of changing anything for about three or four generations. And then someone comes along and says, here's a gun. Go and shoot back. Who's going to say no at that point?
Right. And among other things, I think it's generally agreed. It's generally agreed that a blockade, a full-on blockade, is an act of war. Mm-hmm. Is it not?
Yep. But you can't have a war with non-people, can you?
well, you know.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest of the world, Like you're saying, a lot of photographs coming out. Maybe we need more of that, because that's what made the Vietnam War get really hairy for the U.S. government. Was when people were seeing it in their living rooms over dinner every night, you know. So maybe we need a bit more of that from there. It's upsetting as I find that stuff. But it's that kind of thing that wakes people up. And that's what's needed.
Well, I don't know if you can... See, that's the thing, Dave. I don't know if you can wake people up where Israel's concerned, because the word Israel is so ingrained into our co-opting of a religious structure that for a lot of people, just saying, no, I don't agree, is tantamount to some sort of heresy.
And yet we're talking about a society that has to be racist based on how it was formed and the whole concept of the country. And yet that wouldn't be acceptable. I mean, look at South Africa. I mean, the world... pushed, well, when they tried everything else, you know, like you say, politicians will do the right thing, but not until they've tried everything else first. You know, and I think they tried everything else first at that point. And right now, they've not tried everything else yet. But, I mean, South Africa eventually was pressured.
But, I understand your point, Dave, but... I think
I understand yours, unfortunately.
It doesn't matter how many Palestinians they kill, they get a pass.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
I used to drink in a pub in England called the Saracen's Head. I mean, you know, it's the same thing.
You know, Barbara Tuchman is one of my favorite historical authors. Go and pick up a book she wrote called Bible and Sword. And it's all about the romantic relationship, and by romantic, you know what I mean, not, you know, mm-hmm. not a bare-chested pirate on the cover of some trashy romance novel.
Yeah.
The romantic relationship that's existed for, you know, roughly 1,400 years between the British people and the idea of Israel.
Well, Jerusalem, you know, the song, the hymn. Built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I could never figure that one out. You know, it just seems strange. And
yeah, what is it? And did these feet in ancient times...
And did those feet in ancient times walk up on England's mountain green or something?
Yeah,
something
and that's all Joseph of Arimathea stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's absolute, you can't unweave it from the British character.
I mean, the last night of the proms and all that stuff is really acceptable jingoism. But, I mean, now that Britain's no longer great, it's not that important. But that's what it used to be.
Yeah.
You know?
So, what do you, you know? I don't know how you unweave that. But, of course, you know, we largely absorbed and were a product of that same culture that when we settled here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it actually, you know, it goes beyond even the fundamentalist weirdos like Pastor Hagee and his the Queefy or Koofy or whatever it is, you know, Citizens United for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And that, because if you ask, you know, if you just generally ask your average misinformed American, how do you feel about Israel? Oh, God's chosen people. We got to support them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're killing innocent civilians as fast as they possibly can. Well, I wouldn't be dead less than God wanted them to. God's will. Certain people.
It's this God of love that kills so many people that I can't kind of get my head around.
Yeah, you see that guy coming down the block. Look out. So, right, exactly. Hey, Dave, we've got him blinking like crazy, so I'm gonna roll on and... With any luck, we'll make a little bit of headway out of some of this.
Yeah. Anyway, glad your phones are working.
Yeah, I am too. That scares me when they don't behave like I expect them to. Take care.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Dave in Canada and rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is it me?
It's you, boss.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man.
Listen, the phones are all lit up. That's good. I just want to... If you want to see something really entertaining, go to Crooks and Liars and watch the clip of Zbigniew Brzezinski on the Joe Scarborough show this morning.
Yeah.
They're having a discussion about the Middle East problem, and Scarborough says to him, you can't blame what's going on in Israel on the Bush administration. To which Brzezinski replied, you know, you have such a stunningly superficial knowledge of what went on that it's almost embarrassing to talk to you. Or to listen to you.
See, that's ever so much smarter than what I was going to say, Wayne, which is, how loaded do you have to be to make a statement like that?
Exactly.
And, before you look over the desk, come on, where's the bottle of Old Crow, Joe?
You got to watch the whole clip because it continues. I mean, that's Scarborough. You don't know how many times I've wanted to throw shoes at the television or something.
Well, you know that we're working on the official horn rubber brick.
That would be good.
You know, we'll sell it at the horn store at Cafe Press, and I know you'll run out and get one. I'll have a dozen.
Well, believe me, if you ever listen to Scarborough, he could say things that you would throw that brick with such velocity, it wouldn't matter.
Even that would go through the TV,
yes,
right?
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. But check it out.
Will do.
Everybody, it's good. I'll let you go to the next caller, my good man.
All right, take care, man.
Okay.
See
you. Bye.
Boss Man Wayne. Haven't heard from him in a while. Let's see. Where do we go next? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Bob. John Wathan in Alabama.
John, how are you?
Kicking butt and taking names.
Here, here.
Listen, I wanted to talk to you about your program last night. You made a statement about the amount of material in the TVA fly ash problem being 5.4 million cubic yards, and I came back and corrected you.
Yeah.
And I was wrong, and the last thing I want to do is put misinformation out there. You were right. It was 5.4 million cubic yards, which equates to about 1 billion gallons.
Gallons, right, exactly.
So you were correct, and the last thing I want to do is put misinformation out there with my name on it. When I heard it today, it dawned on me that I had made a mistake.
Well, I it's so easy, John, to get lost between the millions and the billions and the gallons and the cubic yards that I certainly don't think it was an overt mistake. But, you know, any way you slice it, at least the calculations that I read here, TVA said 4 to 6 weeks to clean up, and we're talking about 2.5 years at 24/7.
Yep.
And I'm not the mathematics answer man by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Well, you saw today where they have posted warnings now. EPA has come out and said, do not drink the well water or any surface water in the area.
So when that warning goes out, how far does it extend, John? You know, don't drink your well water.
I'm not up there right now, so I really don't know that. Some of the folks with United Mountain Defense may have a better grasp on how close that is, and I'll try to get some of them in touch with you. I'd like for them to call in and kind of give us an update anyway. But the area that I saw was, you know, like I said before, fairly large. I have gone through my photographs today that are on photo bucket at Creek Keeper underline 2008. And what I'm seeing is that the ash plume clearly does go all the way down into the Tennessee River and past the town of Rockwood, past the little slough, the creek there where their water intake is. So the potential for this spreading downstream, after looking at these photographs, I would have to say is fairly substantial.
Well, I mean, you see that there are pictures and so forth and reports of what they're doing on the surface to load up the goo and get it out of there. But what do you do about it in the water? These hydrologic things are kind of within your purview, John. Once it's in the water and flowing, how do you stop it?
Well, unfortunately, you can't in this case. It's there, and it's in such volume that even the extraction of it from the river is going to cause turbidity. It's going to cause this stuff to be continuously stirred up. And like I explained last night, it's the finite particles of clay that are going to be disturbed in this that also contain the heavy metals. The toxins that we're afraid of are in that type sedimentary deposit. Now, I also noticed today in reviewing my photos that the intake of the power plant is congested with fly ash, and the water that's going through the cooling towers and being discharged on the downstream side is also very turbid with this finite clay particles that I'm talking about. So they are technically bypassing the water. They're pulling the water right off of the contaminants and bypassing it through the plant and flushing it downstream.
Is that more subterfuge, or is there any legitimate means of rehabilitating what goes through there?
No, I'm afraid that's about it, really, because of the way the plant is set up, it has to pull that stuff, you know, from where it is. They can't just move the intake of the plant. The only real, man, TVA ain't gonna like this, but the only real thing they can do to stop the further spread of this during the extraction is to shut that plant down. They need to turn
it off. Well, see, it blows my mind that it's still running.
Huh?
It blows my mind that it's still running.
Oh, absolutely. It is still running, and it's still running full bore. They got the train tracks up now. They can bring the coal back in. Although some of the residents can't drink their water, they can get more coal.
Jesus wept.
Yeah, well, at any rate.
Well, last night you mentioned it. We didn't really go into it, John, and this is an opportunity. I don't want to take too much of your time.
No, that's quite
but right. Last night you mentioned the fact that, you know, when you guys were out with the boats and everything going up past the Ashbergs and everything trying to take water samples, and about the time you ran into John B. Neal, Officer 107, see, it's scorched into my brain now, too, that you got up to a point where they're building a dam of some sort?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to go into that last night. They're calling this a weir. But what it is, and you can see it in the photograph, you can clearly see this, it's a rock dam, riprap dam, with these big, huge chunks of rock. They're pulling it, they're taking a mountain down somewhere to build a dam across the river to fix their screw-up. But they're going to put this all the way across the river with a 7-foot depression in the middle of it, just deep enough for barges to go in and out and remove this material. Well, what that's doing is restricting the flow of the river. It's causing the river to back upstream in people's pastures. They then want to go and put another one upstream of the site, and this
essentially creating a cofferdam.
Exactly. And, you know, rumors are that they're trying to make a more permanent retention basin there.
Well, where are they going? I mean, because that was one of the questions that was put to me by email a little bit ago, John. When they put this stuff in the 265,000 dump truck loads it'll take to clean this goo up. When those 265,000 dump truck loads go, where are they going?
Right. Well, even TVA said they don't know what they're going to do with it yet. Now, I also noticed in my photographs today, I can blow them up now that I'm at home on a computer and look deep into the photographs, and they have pumps set up in the sludge, pumping it back over into ponds that are next to the river.
Well, that certainly is a solution.
Well, they're going to have to. Now, I got to give them, you know, I've got to give them a little bit of defense here. They've got to dewater this stuff somehow in order to be able to move it. Wherever they're pumping it is a temporary resolve, and even that will have to be removed at the end. This plant needs shut down.
And you did mention that they have the ability to divert power around the grid.
Oh, sure they do.
To keep people from
crying out loud.
Yeah, it's not one plant. But when you use the phrase dewater this stuff, when they dewater it, what happens to the water that gets deed?
Well,
I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but
into these adjacent basins. They're pumping it into the same type basin that just blew out, basically.
I'm not trying to be obtuse, John, but this is crazy.
I know.
I mean, this is madness.
Oh, well, I used the term many times last night, insanity. This is insanity. It's the insanity and the myth of cleansing fossil fuels. You can't do it. No matter what you do at the smokestack, this stuff is still nasty. You've got to do something with the residue.
And that, I think you just put your finger on it, John, because everybody wants to talk about carbon sequestration.
See, carbon sequestration, that doesn't work. Carbon sequestration does not work. You cannot pump a gas down into the Earth's surface, which has faults, cracks, fissures in it, from the core out, and expect that it's going to stay there forever. Now, here's an interesting tidbit. The Mesaba Power Plant in Minnesota was slated as being one of the nation's most energy efficient. It had all of the scrubbers and carbon sequestration equipment that was mandated in the permitting of this plant, and it was slated to have been one of the cleanest in the world, also one of the most expensive. But Mesaba Power Plant has no intention of sequestering the carbon until mandated by federal law, making this the single largest producer of greenhouse gases and the most expensive power plant in the United States.
You know, somehow that doesn't strike me as being a bonus.
You can't clean this stuff.
Well, let me go back to the ponds for a minute, John, because I got a question rolling in from the chat room. Our chat room moderator Lottie says, "I hope the ponds they're pumping it into are plastic lined."
No, absolutely not. If your readers would like to, I know I've said this before, but it's on the photo bucket site. Under Creek Keeper, CreekKeeper, underline, the little underscore mark, 2008. And there's a list of albums on the left side over there. Anything with Harriman Ash Spill, Ash Hole Flyover, or Kingston Town Eating, all of those pertain to this event and have water and aerial photos of the entire incident while we were there. And that's where you'll find the details of what I'm telling.
Okay. And is it the same Creek Keeper underscore 2008? Is that for the video at Yahoo, at YouTube as well?
No, I am at YouTube. I am HC Creek Keeper, CreekKeeper, HC CreekKeeper at YouTube. And I've got, the one I've got up there pertains to, John B. Neal badge number 107 in the arrest. I've still got some other video clips that I have not put together yet, and I'm going to continue posting.
Okay. Okay. But folks can, and we'll go and try to capture some of those photos for the, homepage at headonradionetwork.com.
Yeah,
so,
if you have a problem downloading, my stuff is copywritten. If you have a problem downloading, contact me, and I will, we'll work out getting you a disk, or I'll email you the raw files.
Okay, good deal. That works. Well, have you talked?
I appreciate what you're doing. I've been hearing good things coming out of your show, and it.
Well, I had a lot of good feedback on our conversation last night, John. I had a lot of good feedback. And I appreciate the time that you were able to put forward. And again tonight, have you talked to anybody who's still up there today?
Only by email.
Okay.
And things are beginning to mellow a little bit. You know, as far as the media is getting in, as you saw, the CBS report came out, and they had. CBS has a video up now with me addressing the emergency meeting and the mayor demanding, saying that this is a crime. You know, So the major media outlets are finally picking up on it.
What's been the holdup? Why are they that way, John? I guess it's a rhetorical question, but...
Well, it goes back to, you know, the for-profit-only media outlets are, in a lot of cases, bottled up, governed, and owned by the extraction technologists in this country. When the Fairness Doctrine was repealed by Ronald Reagan, it was the beginning of a plan that was culminated during the Bush administration to rob the American people of our media voice. One by one, the large conglomerates began buying up the independent media outlets. Ronald Reagan was the most media-savvy president we have ever had. He knew how to do this, and he set the wheels in motion using Randolph Hearst and several of those key players in his backyard. What we've seen today is a culmination of that plan where the only things that we see on the general, I can't remember the term you gave the television today, but it about knocked me off my feet. I loved it. What we see on the TV and here and in the mainstream newspapers today is basically White House stenography. It's what they want you to believe.
And, you know, frankly, I don't care which political party is doing the stenography. They could, you know, on their end, John, they call it message management.
Sure, sure. The Fairness Doctrine, if a Democrat had 5 minutes on public television, a Republican had 5 minutes right behind him on public television.
Yep.
If I had an opinion as an environmentalist, as a coal activist, then someone from the coal industry would also have 5 minutes. It was Fairness Doctrine, and it's gone.
Well, and it was also a function of the philosophical determination that the airwaves are public and that people who are allowed to profit by using the airwaves ought not be able to do so without giving a little something back.
There are organizations out there like Citizens Coal Council, OVEC, Highlands Conservancy, Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, Sockham, I can't name them all, Mountain Watershed, Tri-State Mining, that have been trained in media relations now. And we've learned how to get inside mainstream media and kind of play it a little bit through editorials. But even at that, we're still bottled up. And I go back to what I said last night. Without people like you allowing us the freedom to speak the truth, we would never get our messages out. These companies have millions and billions they can throw into ad campaigns, while activists, environmentalists on the ground have nothing but the truth and the media. And it's important, too, to understand, you know, environmentalist has gotten to be kind of a four-letter word.
Yeah.
Most of the people that are in this fight are not environmentalists. They are survivors who are simply trying to survive a devastating industry that is destroying their family life, their community life, and their health. It's not a matter of being a tree hugger or a fish kisser or whatever you want to call me. It's a matter of protecting my butt.
Well, that's exactly it. But, you know, environmentalist has been transformed by the right wing, by their control of media. And, you know, there's that god-awful junkie, Flush Flimball, and called environmentalist wackos. Of course, he also invented feminazi or enviro-Nazi. And that, you know, that's framing, and it's something that we've got to learn to work around. And you just laid it out really, really well, John. The fact of the matter is, these people that they insist on calling tree huggers, and of course Don Blankenship, and you know what a
Dandy Don.
Yeah, what a dirtbag he is.
Number one.
Yeah, he's taken to calling us greeniacs.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But this isn't, you know, this isn't about the precious little snail darter. This isn't about the bald eagles. This is about people.
That's it. It's not an environmental issue. It is a social issue. This is environmental justice, true environmental justice at its very best. It is injustice to the people without a voice by industrial interest. And it's targeted. If you look at the richest coal veins in America today, they are also the most impoverished communities in America today. They have the highest bad health factors of most communities in America today. Their economy is in the pits. Their roads are destroyed. Their quality of life has been diminished. Their homes have been blasted and blown apart or subsided into the ground. As in Washington, Pennsylvania, poor old Miriam Plovic up there, her home, they undermined her home, and it subsided on Christmas Day. The woman refused to leave her home. She set up video cameras, levels, plumb bobs, strings all over the house, and she videotaped her house subsiding on Christmas Day. You can hear the pipes popping. She baked a cake that was three-quarters of an inch thick on one side and over an inch and a half thick on the other side. This is a 14-inch baking pan, and that's the tilt that the house took while the cake was baking. It sank. Oh, Lordy. I want to say it sank about 4 feet altogether and tilted. The thing moved about 36 inches geographically. I mean, the house is not in the same location where it started. They had to jack the house up off the foundation because the foundation was destroyed. They built a new foundation. Before they could put the house back down on the foundation, the new foundation broke because the land is going to subside for generations to come.
And that's one of those things, John, that I was thinking about. You have no idea the number of things I was thinking about after our conversation. When we talk about mountaintop removal up here, of course, with what you're very much familiar, the company is forever saying, we're making flat land in a land that ain't got much flat. We're doing a public service.
That's right.
But no matter how hard, they walk that ground, no matter how hard they bulldoze over it and stomp it and run every piece of heavy to drive it down and make it solid, it keeps subsiding.
Are you familiar with Sink Sink?
I know about Sink Sink very well. And that really god-awful golf course they built?
That's right. It was built on a mountaintop removal reclaim, and they can't even get the damn electronic doors to open and close because it's subsiding. They've never housed a prisoner in it, have they?
Not to my knowledge, but I could be. They may have tried. But the funniest, I was told, I don't live there.
I was told by reputable people in the field that the doors wouldn't even open and close like they were, you know, because the building won't stop subsiding.
And see, the funny thing about that is that with all of that stomping in of the earth that they think is making it, more stable, now they've come around, and there's a researcher out there that says, well, you know, we can grow oak trees 100 years old on that as long as we don't pack it so tight.
Well, you know what? I think God had it packed a lot tighter before they got there.
Considerable.
Do you know that according to some wind farm studies, that by doing mountaintop removal, peak reduction, whatever you want to call it in whatever region, by doing mountaintop removal, you reduce the wind farm potential by as much as 40%.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That's
power head.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we've been howling about so stridently, loudly, and longly with regard to this wind project in down on Coal River Mountain is the fact that if you chop the tops off, it doesn't matter. You can put windmills up all day, but they're out of the effective wind. And
in time, they're going to take down all the ridges where eventually you'll get that crosswind back. Ooh, I didn't get a laugh out of that.
I'm kind of running low, John. but one of the things...
You know, that's their plan, isn't it? Last time I left up over there, last time I looked, over one-fourth of West Virginia is already permitted for mountaintop removal.
Yeah, I think something like that. We've already lost an area the size of the state of Delaware. We're not that big a state. Delaware matters.
I know.
And one of the other things I wanted to ask you about, though, is you had mentioned to me something that you saw in regard to a mountaintop or a mountain. See, I've changed my language. John, I don't call it mountaintop removal anymore. I call it mountain removal.
Thank you.
Because, you know what, when they're done, you can call that whatever you want to, but mountain ain't one of them.
Yeah, that's like me and clean fossil fuels. I won't say it and the other word together anymore.
Yeah, it just can't come out of your mouth. So it's mountain removal as far as I'm concerned. But you saw something in the course of your time down there in East Tennessee that you described to me that was horrifying. You saw a wind farm, did you not?
This is insanity. This is crazy. Yes. And from a distance, when we flew out, I was the first flight up. And by the way, if environmentalists in the Southeast haven't tapped into South Wings yet, you need to. South Wings, www.southwings.org, conservation through aviation. These guys are absolutely heroes. There are no trespass laws in the sky. They can fly you over any gate, anywhere, and you can shoot from the top down. And if you're a 501c3, it don't cost you nothing. That's what they're there for, is to help us. South Wings flew us and from a distance across the top of this disaster in the sunlight, I mean, in the far distance of the sunrise there, you could see a wind farm. And the first photographs of it looked really pretty. So we flew over there to look at it. And while we're there, I mean, the closer you get to it, the photographs start showing that the mountain has been benched all the way around this thing, and they're preparing Cross Ridge mining on the slope with the wind farm on top of the mountain. It's the craziest thing you ever saw.
What's going to happen to the wind farm?
Beats the heck out of me, boss. I mean, I don't think they're going to undermine, I don't think they're going to take the wind farm down, but they're bench mining right under it. I see, this is crazy. They call it slope ridge mining up there.
Yeah, the truth ain't in them. You know that phrase as well as I do. But how many more euphemisms can they come up with for destroying communities?
How many more defenses can we come up with for the euphemism? Because if we come up with 1,000 defenses, they'll have 1,001 euphemisms. They have billions in media and ad campaign people who do nothing but study how to make words come out of people's mouth that make them look good.
And we have, you know, I don't mean to blow my own horn, but this is what there is.
Yeah.
We need a whole lot more of what we're doing here, or a lot more reach and ability on the part of what we ourselves are doing. I'd prefer the latter. Actually, I'd prefer both. But right now, we don't, you know, there was a debate, or not a debate, but there's a pretty noteworthy blog, John, called America Blog. And a really brilliant guy by the name of John Aravosis runs it. And somebody took him to task a few days back for running those, and I won't hurt your ears, clean fossil fuels ads.
Thank you.
And he said, well, I'm going to run them because the other side isn't paying me anything to run their ads.
Yeah.
And I got to admit, I got a little bit pissy.
Sure. It all comes down to money.
And I posted to him and I said, tell you what, you know why the other side's not paying you to run any ads? Because the other side's busy spending its money by getting water to communities that mining has destroyed.
You know, this is going to be, my first of the 100 days of action right here, right now. My things running through my mind. I'm going to ask all of your listeners to take these conversations and all the information you can find about this incident and send it to someone who does not live in the coal field. Send it to La Jolla, California. Send it to San Diego. Send it to Puerto Rico. Send it anywhere that is outside the choir box that we normally have to preach to. It's good to preach to the choir. You got to keep them in practice. But if we continuously preach only to our own choir, then nobody hears our voice.
Hear, hear. And, you know,
partly La Jolla, California, need to know that when they flip on a light switch, they blew off 70 acres of somebody's mountain somewhere.
Your electricity, yeah, your electricity.
What high-rise buildings that stand in cities today, if you take it from zero electricity input and you power that building up, you have used 70 acres of West Virginia mountain. That's about the equivalent of what it takes
to power it up.
That's right. That's insanity.
We're not talking about day-to-day.
No. That's just to bring it up.
See, I'm getting a little, not, I don't mean right now, but I have for a while now, John. I've been getting a little cranky.
You know, I noticed that in some of your verbiage today.
And, you know, the question that I ask periodically is, what in the world do we in West Virginia owe? And I'm not trying to put off people who live in cities, and I'm not trying to put my listeners off. Because we got, you know, we got listeners around the country and around the globe. But honest to God, what does West Virginia owe Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Detroit, St. Louis, Chicago, Nashville, Knoxville, Charlotte, Atlanta, Birmingham? What does Appalachia owe those communities? Because, see, we're not getting anything back. This isn't a barter system. We don't get anything. It's just all take.
Along with that question goes, who gave Wall Street profit jockeys the right to determine that West Virginia, Tennessee, Alabama, the Four Corners, the areas that are deeply impacted, who gave them the right to declare us energy sacrifice zones?
Precisely. You know, who decided that my community isn't worth saving?
That's right.
Who decided that my children don't have a right to grow up breathing clean air or not be killed by some monster overloaded coal truck? Who did that, John? And you and I both know the answer.
Yeah.
You just mentioned Wall Street.
Yep.
But holy prophet.
I have to step out of the ring here when I say we, because I feel like I'm a little more enlightened than the normal Joe on the street. Most of the folks, I'll be honest with you, here in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, if you walk to somebody here and ask them what a coal mine looked like, they'd say, are they still doing that? You know? Most people don't know what we know living in the field. That's why we got to get this beyond the coal field. And it's going to be your free media sources that make that happen.
Yeah, I think it will. And also an unwillingness on our part to accept business as usual, even from the people who are on our side of these issues. You know, there's been a raging debate on this program that predates your appearance here. With a couple of so-called liberal media sources, and it goes back to an appearance by one of the reality campaign guys from San Francisco on Rachel Maddow's show. And I love Rachel Maddow, right?
Yeah.
Love her to pieces. And they did she did a nice long 8-10 minute segment on how there's no such thing as clean. But not once in that process did at one point in that process, John. The guy from the reality campaign said, well, you know, if we can extract all the carbon, then I guess that eliminate emissions, then I guess
coal-fired power can be part of our energy package going into the future. And that was the part where Manee hit the furniture.
Well, coal is
because these people clearly don't understand where the stuff comes from. Right. It's like being in the grocery store and looking at a package of hamburger and thinking that that's how it started out.
Yeah, moo.
Yeah, no mooing, no cattling, no, that's been hamburger. I don't know, maybe we mine the hamburger, too.
Oh, man.
So, you know, we've got a little campaign going on to try to turn the light on for Rachel Maddow. And we've got to do that. We've absolutely got to do that.
We've got to do it for everybody. Like we talked about last night, the mindset around coal consumption, about extraction technology, period, is what we're going to have to change. We cannot continue to consume the earth. Even the most avid, rabid believers in the immediate rapture, you know, I don't want to criticize anybody's religion because you're free to believe what you want to believe.
Yeah, we do that on Wednesday
even
nights.
If the rapture comes in a catastrophic blow and everybody's taken away and they're going to go to heaven or hell immediately, we still have to live on this earth in the interim, so why not make it the best possible place while we're here?
Darned if I can figure out why not. But religiously, the fundamentalists who preach that stuff, John, they say it's because of that verse in Genesis that says, I give you dominion over the earth.
Yeah.
Well, dominion doesn't mean to poop where you live.
Humans are the only species on earth that destroy the habitat that they live in.
Yeah. I mean, I've happened in the woods upon a buzzard's nest a couple of times, and it's not a very pleasant place, but a buzzard can still live there.
Sure.
We do to where we live worse than what a buzzard does in his roost.
Well, you can't live in places where this is going on. Right here in Alabama, we've got the sheer insanity of a major strip operation that's been permitted by the Alabama Surface Mining Commission and the Alabama Department of Environmental Maniacs to discharge. I think there's 26, 28. There's several outfalls from a strip mine directly above the drinking water intake for the city of Birmingham, Alabama.
You're kidding.
Birmingham is a fairly large city. Yep. I mean, it compares to a little smaller than Atlanta, bigger than Chattanooga, maybe around the size of Nashville. This is a fairly large metropolis.
Yeah.
And they're permitting coal mining right at the freshwater drinking intake.
Lord
One
God.
Mistake. One slurry pond explosion, blowout, accident, act of God, whatever you want to call it, one of those could shut down the drinking water intake for the city of Birmingham. Now, it's not the only intake they have, but it's still a major source of water.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And
another thing, the southeast right now, or at least in Alabama, we've just now barely crept out of a five-year drought.
Oh, I know.
Lakes and rivers are at an all-time low. Tennessee is still in a drought. Every drop of usable drinkable water should be considered sacred. It should be something that is protected above your own life, because without it, you won't
have one. Amen. Amen.
See, the Lakota, most American Indians have a different perspective of life. As most Christians, the hierarchy begins with God, my family, and then me. In the Native American cultures, it's Creator, the earth, my family, and then me. Because without a healthy earth, you cannot raise a healthy family.
Yeah, no mother, no
child.
No mother, no child.
That's
and
right.
it's like
disturb anything that can harm the last seven generations or the next seven generations. You don't dig up my ancestors, and you don't crap in my water so my grandbabies can't drink it.
You know, that seems rather straightforward until you get to the bean counters. Where's the profits going to come from?
Wall Street profit jockeys. See, that's what's happened to the coal industry. At one time, the coal industry was run by coal operators.
Sure.
As ruthless as they were, Peabody knew coal mining. Drummond Coal knew coal mining. They knew how to do the work. When coal prices fell out, at one time it got to be where coal wasn't but $14. It's $22 a ton here in Alabama. Now it's way up over $100. I don't even know what it is. I hadn't looked at the brokerage anymore lately. But when it was at an all-time bottom, you could buy coal in Wyoming for $14 a ton and have it shipped to Alabama cheaper than you could burn it. Now it's gone back up. You know, where does the circle stop? I kind of lost my train of thought.
No, it didn't sound to me like you did. But what if I understand you correctly?
Oh, I know where I was going with it. The coal operators were in charge.
Yeah.
When the bottom dropped out, they sold their interest in these mines, and a lot of these mines sat fallow for a long, long period of time. Nobody worked in them. They were unsafe when they were closed down because they weren't profitable. Then these Wall Street profit jockeys, these speculators, started buying up all of these coal mines and coal reserves while the prices were down. They jerked the prices of the market around to the point where the prices come back up. Under Bush administration, it's gone through the roof. So the people that have reopened a lot of these older mines have never worked in the industry before. They have no experience. They know nothing but...
Well, look at International Coal Group. There's a classic example, the people who brought us Sago. They started out buying and rehabbing failing steel mills and then decided coal would be a good idea, too.
Yeah.
And now they're reopening Widowmaker, old deep Widowmaker mines all over West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
The site of one of West Virginia's worst, the worst, no, but the site of one of West Virginia's worst deep mine disasters happened in the early part of the 20th century at a place called Eccles, West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Well, International Coal Group has gone in and reopened Eccles.
Mm-hmm.
One of these geniuses will decide to go in and reopen Monongah.
Oh, Lordy.
Or maybe Farmington.
Well, you know, they were supposed to have closed down Jim Walter number 5 after the Brookwood 13 got killed. And the last time I was up there, you know, I'm used to seeing the coal pad empty and no coal coming out of the tipple. I went up there and the pad was full and the tipple was running and the slurry's running back into the dad blame sludge pond on my watershed. Very similar to the one you got up there above Marshport. Not
yep.
as big, but the same situation. This one is, it's about a mile and a third long. Maybe 300 yards wide and about 200 feet deep, full of slurry. Just waiting.
Just waiting.
Yep. And
well,
pumping into it again.
I'm a professional broadcaster. I talk like that. Just to give you an idea of where I live. You're
tendency to get people excited.
Yeah. Give you an idea where I live. If you get, you know, the Alabama State Quarter's got Helen Keller on the back.
Mm-hmm.
The West Virginia State Quarter's got a representation of New River Gorge Bridge, which is a engineering marvel. But the angle that, or the way that they depicted that bridge, if you look at the back of that West Virginia State Quarter, John, the mountain that's in the background of that magnificent representation of the very state of West Virginia,
uh-huh.
That's where I live. And they're blowing that one up.
Oh, no.
And it sits, I mean, because I know what water means to you, it sits in a little triangle right between the nearly the mouth of the Gauley River
and the the Gauley and the New flow together to form the Kanawha, the Great Kanawha. And this mine sits between those two rivers. And already, if you, I've been told that if you go down to the Gauley River across from a little community called Jody, and you stick a quart mason jar down about a foot, there is a running, flowing layer of sludge.
This is running underground?
No, running under the water itself.
Oh, yeah.
Just a layer flowing inside the river itself. And this river is the heart and soul of the tourism industry around here, which gives us a whole lot more revenue and tax dollars than the coal companies could ever dream of doing.
Is anybody sampling that stuff?
A little bit, not a lot. I mean, that'd be the DEP, and the, you know, the sampling and testing is just not really their bag right now.
Huh.
That's where I live. And it's expanding. You know, it's come out of the southern coal fields, and you're right. They've got dibs on just about every mountain that's got a 6-inch seam of coal under it in this state. We actually got the Department of Environmental Protection guys to admit that this mine that they're doing here up from my house. This mine, John, the layer right above the seam that they want to get has one of the most astonishingly toxic layers of selenium-bearing slate that they have ever seen. The coal company even reported it from its core samples in its permit application. And the DEP looked at it and said, how about that? Astonishingly toxic selenium. Approved. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. And they're doing what? They're doing 5,000 acres right now. That's what the permit is. But the land that they control extends 20,000. Or yeah, something like that. Maybe an extra zero. 5,000 it's 20, I think. Four times what they're doing now, and it completely encircles my community. If one of those mine walls blows out like did in Martin County, Kentucky in 2001.
Yeah.
Because all that whole mountain's undermined. If that mountain blows out, the first thing the water's going to hit is our head start. And the head start can't complain because the coal company owns the land that the head start center sits on.
Mm-hmm.
How's this not slavery? How's this not serfdom, peonage?
Well, that's exactly what it is, and it's unfortunate, but we, and here again, I go back to there are those of us that don't fit in this we circle because we have some enlightenment. The American citizens have allowed this to happen through complacency. We've sat back and allowed our government to control us instead of we the people controlling our government. We now kowtow to our government instead of our government kowtowing to us. We have lost our voice with our government. People, you know, it's really, even in the most significant election in American history, it was still not 100% vote. We didn't have I don't know the figures of the total vote, but it was really astonishingly low for such a historic vote. People don't get out and take part in the one thing that they have that gives them a voice, and that's the vote. Too many people just take for granted that it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah. Eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow we die.
Well, okay, but I'm going out kicking.
I'm going, yeah, exactly. And you know what? I wanted to mention to you, you know, like I told you last night, I was born and raised in Alabama. And I haven't been down, and frankly, because of gas prices and stuff like that, I haven't been down around the old home place in over a year. And I miss it something fierce. But I tell you what, John, when I get, if I do get down there, I'm gonna ring you again, and we're gonna go see some of what's happening in Alabama.
Come on.
Because you know what? That's home too.
Well, you can, you just about ride a bicycle to where it starts. And then from here all the way to Pennsylvania, see, Hurricane Creek is the southernmost free-flowing stream in the Appalachian mountain chain. Beyond us, you're in the upper coastal plain, and the rock geology is gone. There is no more real coal. Down there, you get the burnable dirt, lignite, and brown coal. But Hurricane Creek, being the southernmost free-flowing stream, we are the same rock outcrop. It's actually the geologically known as the Pennsylvania outcrop.
Yes.
You know, we're part of the same mountains that you are, Pennsylvania. They're the oldest mountains on the planet.
They once stood as high as the Himalayas.
Huh?
They once stood as high as the Himalayas.
That's right. Now, they've worn off. They're still spectacular in their beauty, but they are rich in what, believe it or not, at one time I was very proud when I didn't know what it was all about, that Alabama had some of the richest coal veins in the country. I am so thankful that we don't have mountains like West Virginia in our backyard, because somebody would have to either represent me in a murder case, or I would be killed. I could not stand to sit back and watch my mountains being blown down like you people are having to do. Just like I couldn't go to the Four Corners and watch my grandmother's grave being pushed up by a bulldozer like Maxine Cascali had to do from the Dene Nation. She actually watched the bulldozer push down her home after she fought for years to stay in it. She eventually had to leave. She gave up, and she watched the bulldozers push her hogan down and went right through the graveyard where her grandmother was buried and never stopped, just kept going across the desert. It's criminal.
It's crazy-making.
Well, that's fossil fuel.
It sure is.
That's extraction technology. And this country is run by extraction technologists.
From top to bottom, you're absolutely
yes,
right. Well, John, I hope we will talk some more.
I'm sure we will now that I found you.
Well, I tell you, if you don't mind, don't hide your light under a bushel, and let other people know that we're here.
Well, you know, I don't think I've ever been really accused of hiding that light.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Thanks a bunch, man. I appreciate the voice. I appreciate what you're doing. And, you know, those folks up there in the hills of Tennessee right now, the United Mountain Defense, they are absolutely beholden to you and the other free medias in America for getting their story out.
Well, I'll get some of those folks on. I happen to know who those guys are, and I'll get some of them on to talk about what they've seen too.
All right. Well, if folks out there want to help, that's who to send money to. They need help for lab testing and stuff like that. Those guys are really going to be in their knuckle down for a long, long campaign, and these lab tests are expensive. And if we want the truth, it's going to have to come from independent sources on the ground. Send them a buck or two. They need it.
Absolutely. And before we do go, John, I want to let you know, folks, if they, in addition to just listening to this program, there at the headonradionetwork.com website, we maintain a free chat room as well.
Okay.
So if folks want to introduce themselves and get to know one another and meet some of the folks who make the horn go, and bring this issue out in the chat room, they're welcome to do that, too.
All right. Well, I want to mention, too, for the folks in America that might want to contribute, they are a 501c3 tax exempt, and it's 100% tax deductible.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Bring it on.
Praise Jim.
Glory.
See you later, bro.
Bye now, John. John Wathen. Did you hear that praise?
we may have to make him a deacon in the Cathedral of Common Sense for prayer meeting night on Wednesdays. He does that way too good. Let's roll on. My colleague John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is standing by. Hey, John, long time no talk to, brother.
Yeah, man, happy preemptive New Year.
Well, it's New Year's Eve morning for you, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, afternoon. We're, you know, under 12 hours from the moment. Oh, excuse me, I got to close the door. The chickens suddenly realize that the house door was open. And they start heading right this way, going, "What's in there?" But I've been kind of a little frustrated with progressives all week with the Israel-Palestine thing. The silence has been deafening.
And I
was really frustrated, and Gail was about to scream her bloody lungs out until our friend Canada UK rang in. And of course, it took someone from the UK. And I just want to read you something, Bob, and I guarantee this is going to summon our own little Zionist wacko, Mark Levine. Get this. This is a wonderful piece, and I think one of the reasons why I haven't heard anything on our network is everyone's afraid of Mark.
Oh, no. To be fair, I'm the only one who's been here since this started. I mean, since the attack on Gaza started.
Right.
And
well,
as
here,
such...
Here's my thing, okay? I have a little bit of background when it comes to Mark because I tried to have a couple of discussions and email with him over things that I experienced face-to-face with big, big, big Israeli organizations here in Australia raising money strictly to go and kill all Palestinians. And he just denied that that was even possible. I was making it up, and I was an anti-Semite. He called me that in the chat room. Here's the kind of thing that I wish he could see the side of. There's a great, wonderful piece in the Daily Kos. And my voice is shaking because this is such a scary thing for anyone to question at all, Israel. And what bugs me is how we seem to justify 100 eyes for an eye. I think it's disgusting. And if it was any other country, and it's only the United States by proxy in the Middle East, as far as I'm concerned, with Israel. And I think it's a massive problem. Now, here's what, and anytime I use my own words, people are going to label me as an anti-Semite. So I'm going to use another Jew's words, okay? Because it has nothing to do with Jews or their religion. It has to do with that nation, what they get up to, and what we allow them to get away with. So here's a wonderful piece from Chilean Jew at the Daily Kos. You can find it. It says, "Today I end my support of Israel. Like David Minzer, I'm Jewish and a descendant of Holocaust survivors. Moreover, I've been a Zionist all of my life. I went to a Zionist school. I was active in Zionist youth groups. I've always been a fervent supporter of Israel as a refuge for Jews around the world who seek a place to exercise their tradition and embrace their identity in peace. I sang the Israeli anthem in the train rails of Auschwitz-Birkenau, and I pledged to fight every day of my life to make sure the savage crimes that had taken place there would never happen again. Every year I pledged, never again, remember, and never forget. Well, I haven't forgotten. And so to honor that pledge, to honor the memory of my family members who died in those death camps, and because there comes a time when silence is betrayal, today I finally and publicly end my support of the State of Israel. And I'm sick and tired of this 100 eyes for an eye. And I think, and it's disgusting, the media, it's, you can't even challenge. And they always talk about, oh, they withdrew. No, they didn't. They might have withdrawn, but they turned it into a siege.
Well, you have to withdraw if you're going to have a siege. Absolutely.
And when you bring people under siege, they're going to fight back. And this 100 eyes for an eye thing has got to end. And I hate to say it, and I almost have to agree with Gail's statement, when this kind of stuff continues, the only thing that's going to stop this from happening is going to be a complete collapse of the United States.
You wonder.
For this stuff to continue, it almost makes me want to see the entire U.S. economy collapse, and that pains me because there are so many people that I love.
But, John, I don't mean to be a naysayer on this.
And I want to make it abundantly clear, and I'm not, this is not me barking at you, it's not, it's really not. I want to make it abundantly clear that the reason I have not spent a lot of time on this issue has nothing to do with being afraid to say anything about Israel, because I've never been afraid to. And I have criticized them broadly. And I've had the same sort of exchanges with Mark Levine. I've stayed away from it because of the disaster that's going on here. I had it on the stack for this evening. And we will probably talk about it some more in coming days. But you say that the collapse of the United States might, no, or the collapse of our continent, no, because we will always, if our own children in this country are starving with their ribs sticking out, we will find money to send to Israel. We will.
Well, you're probably right there. And, you know, and this is where one of those things where I end up having real trouble having an honest conversation with some people on this, because they want to go back to some religious right to be there. And as far as I'm concerned, every religion is bunk, so it gives you no foundation for anything.
Right. The invisible cloud god told me to. Does not work on my Monopoly board.
Exactly. And, you know, I've just been sitting there watching the coverage of this, you know, and, like, I know Hamas is a major pain in the ass. I understand that. But you know what? I go back to that 100 eyes for an eye. It's this absolutely out of balance, completely overreaching retaliation. I would never say that any country does not have the right to defend oneself.
Nope.
But you can't use that as an excuse for a genocide of a people. And I cannot, and it just freaks me out.
Well, let's understand. Let's understand, John. This is genocide. This is genocide. Just because there are no people with blonde hair and blue eyes marching around in spiffy black uniforms stoking ovens does not mean that what's going on in Gaza is not an attempted genocide. It is genocide.
Absolutely. And the playing of terminology drives me crazy, Bob. Okay? You know, oh, they fire from civilian areas using civilians as protection. Wait a minute. There's what? About 10,000 actually uniformed Hamas. And then there's something like 10,000 to 15,000 other associated citizen fighters. This is what happens when people are in a struggle for their own survival. Their city has been divided. They're not allowed to get supplies in. They're under a massive embargo enforced by a nation that only wants to see their destruction. And all they talk about is, you know, like, you know, they talk about all these nations say that Israel doesn't have a right to exist. How about we actually have a conversation about the issue? Because I think the whole concept that they decided to, you know, post-Holocaust, there were millions of people that wanted to get out. Why did we have to cut out a piece of anyone else's land and give it to them? If it had been, when we have like refugees escaping, you know, Iraq when we went in, they went everywhere. They went wherever they could go. They went wherever people would accept them into their nation and under their democratic principles would have protection for their religious traditions and everything else. No matter how silly I might think it is, they have every right to have it. And I would defend them having it. But I don't see how, regardless of the religion, regardless of the history, how you can go and draw a little thing on the map and say, that's yours, and not expect for you to end up having trouble forevermore.
I'll be honest with you, John. I see stuff like this Gaza murder. You know, plain words do the best plain talking sometimes. Murder, in the first degree, because it's premeditated, and it is intentional, therefore it's murder. I see this stuff, and frankly, we hate you, you hate me, our God's bigger than your God, all of that stuff, And to be honest with you, I looked at Agnes the other day, John, and I said, some nights I fall asleep praying to the God who isn't listening, let the earth open up and swallow them all.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Without Israel and without the Middle East, we might have a chance at peace in our own nation.
And I just find it amazing how the oppressed becomes the oppressor. It's incredible. And that's what they have become. Out of their own fear. I mean, this is what shows you what fear. When politicians, because I fully believe that the actions of both Hamas and of the Israeli government don't actually represent what either of the peoples are interested in.
You mean living without violent exploding things falling on them?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, it's just
that's the thing that just pushes, because I maintain this little spark, John, of something that thinks there is something divine in all of us that, you know, and when you die, it's all energy, okay? And ancient people who couldn't fathom a freaking wheelbarrow had to come up with cities with streets paved in gold and a McDonald's on every corner and all of that stupid, infantile garbage in order to manifest what they otherwise couldn't express. But it's this stuff that makes me get toward a full-on atheism, there is no God and Woody Allen is his prophet kind of thing. And that is this. If the big sky critter was real, he would have opened the earth and had it swallow everything from the Indus River to the Mediterranean coast. He would have. Because it's obvious that both of these people who claim to be, oh, yo, God, we got his ear, don't. They don't get it. They have no idea what creation, their word, not mine, is about. They do not love their fellow man, even though their books tell them to. Include the Christians in that one, too. Thank you very much. And it makes me sick, and it makes me weep. And it makes me angry as hell that anybody who says that this is wrong, anybody who ever served Alan Dershowitz a cold cup of coffee is an anti-Semite in some people's books. It makes me nuts.
Oh, it drives me crazy. I mean, and you know, my long relationship with, you know, the author Anthony Lowenstein.
Sure.
You know, and he's
Anthony's got to be just probably incoherent at this point.
Well, yeah, and you know, the Australian Jewish lobby spends a huge amount of money trying to destroy him every year because he simply says, you know, it's completely uneven. It's completely out of proportion, all the reaction to everything, and not being able to see any hint of responsibility from Israel for anything. You know, they're thoughtless. And that drives me nuts. It's the same as the fervent right-wingers before we went into Iraq going, my country, right or wrong, shut up, you asshole. It's the same freaking weird right-wing disgusting mentality. It's amazing how it's transported to people all over the world. Same hypocrisy.
Yeah, and you know, both Muslim and Jew claim Isaiah as a prophet. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 4, John, says, and he will judge between nations and will render decisions for many peoples, and they will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they learn war. Well, I'm enough of a smartass, John, to think that never again will they learn war has a meaning that maybe others don't understand. They don't have to learn it. They already know it all the way down to their toenails. And damnation upon the lot of them for this. And by the way, while we're at it, can somebody get busy and nominate Cynthia McKinney for the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yes, thank you very much. And I did you see some of the hateful stuff thrown at her in the Huffington Post?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, these people going, oh, she's just a Jew hater. It's like, what? What? Going there with humanitarian aid, surgeons, medical people. If any other nation had rammed, any other Middle Eastern nation had rammed that ship, it would have been reason to start war. Again, the double standard.
And it's, and that's the thing that makes this all so difficult to talk about. If we were talking about Nation A blockading Nation B, the entire United Nations would be meeting, and there would be sweat beating on every forehead in the room, and somebody in the White House would be, oh, you know, we got to go, and we can't let this. But no. The Bush administration referred to Hamas as thugs. Well, you know what? Somebody needs to tell that horse's rear end with the beady eyes and that jug handle ears that those thugs were democratically elected.
Thank you for bringing this up, Bob. I was going to try and find a way to bring this back, you know, because any time you discuss this issue with certain people, they're always going to jump around. You know, you bring up any kind of thing, they're going to jump around and go, buh, 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 buh. And it's the Hamas thing that really, really fascinates me. They have democratic elections, and they elect these folks, right? Now, they might not have been the people that the West might have wanted to have in there. But because, you know, it was, you know, Fatah and whatnot really weren't doing as good, weren't looking out for the people. Hamas was on the ground getting water and food to people and trying to protect people. Not forgetting some of the other crap that they do, firing rockets, all that horrible stuff. But they got elected because the people actually saw something being done for their everyday welfare. And instead of engaging them, we rejected them. If we'd engaged them, it could be a really different situation. But because they weren't who we liked and they weren't just going to bend over for us, we had to destroy them. And it's American imperialism exported, as far as I'm concerned.
It's a proxy fight. You see, we do this. There's a lot of people in the United States, John, who really do get all weepy and mushy over Israel because they whip out their poorly translated Bibles and those that bless thee I shall curse, I shall bless them, and those that bless thee I shall, you know, a bunch of BS, okay? That was written down before anybody ever knew that there was an other side to the world. Or anything beyond the horizon for that moment. I think we're gonna walk to the horizon. And it just keeps, never mind. But people really do get mushy about that stuff. They feel like God's going to drop a piano on their heads if they don't say that, you know, in the United States, it's no longer my country right or wrong. It's that country right or wrong. Because even in the liberal community, the progressive community, there's a lot of us who go, huh? And because is the piano coming yet? And the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of people who get that way, but in the corridors of government, that emotional stuff doesn't fly. Just like the same reason that my entire region of the United States of America is being destroyed, it's for something entirely different. Money. There's big money to be made in the Palestinian genocide. And it's that simple. Oh, yeah, we'll hide behind the Bible verses.
Yeah.
But go ask the folks who make the helicopters that we send over there to rocket the Palestinian children in their beds. What it comes down to them. Well, you know, rocketing Palestinian children means jobs here at home. By God, if that's all you can do to make a living, you ought to starve. Oh, there's John Hagee again. Starve!
You know, and he, when it comes to this issue, and I sometimes understand the progressive, you know, whatever, being afraid to go there, because just now, you know, as you and I are having this chat, I see Texas Betsy come into the chat room, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's someone that I adore. I think she's just such a wonderful person who has unbelievably strong and devout religious beliefs. And part of me sits there thinking, God, I hope she understands I'm not attacking her. And she and I,
or the faith, or the people.
Right.
This is an issue of governments.
And she and I have had this conversation before, so I, you know, as far as I'm concerned, she and I are, she understands where I come from. And, you know, and I try to make it very clear that, you know, it's never about your faith. Because actually we've had, and you and I and Peter have had some great conversations about some of the traditions that she's gotten, the way that she's explained them, and the reasons that she does it are so honest, which I think is so rare.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. But sadly, and frankly, to be honest, I see nothing to suggest that Barack Obama will step in and do anything different than what George Bush is doing now. There's no data. There's only hope for change. And I'm getting a little worn out with that. I know January 20th is still a long way away. But hadn't said anything. Hasn't said much. Well, you know, he's been briefed. What we need is leadership in America that will look at, because, yeah, 100 eyes for an eye? I mean, that's the soul of disproportion. And I was talking with Agnes this morning before I took out of here. I said, if we had any moral courage about us, we'd say, look, it's over. Not another damn dime flows out of here until you stop this and until you get serious about living in peace with your neighbors. And until your neighbors get serious about living in peace with you. Because, frankly, to be brutally honest, because, you know, the other side are the ones who, well, you know, it's all about free market economics, right? To be brutally honest, there's not a blessed thing that grows or is manufactured in Israel that we can't do without. The only thing that happens in the Arab world that we can't do without is petroleum, and people like you and me would like to really get around to trying to doing without petroleum. And, you know, we've had Kate and we've had Albert talking about the paradigm shift and things like collapses. There will come a time when the Middle East will not matter. Not Israel, not Lebanon, not Syria, not Jordan, not Iraq, not Saudi Arabia, Yemen. I'm always going to have a soft spot for Egypt because of the flowering of civilization there, and a soft spot for Mesopotamia because of the flowering of civilization there, because that's just the kind of person I am. But there's going to come a time when Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, is going to return to the sands, because they're not going to have any damn thing that we're interested anymore, and they're not going to, and they'll eventually spend all their money, and we'll look at them and go, eat the sand. And I'm not saying that from a standpoint of what a brutish bastard I am, John. I'm saying that from the standpoint of what the free marketeers will say. Because if you don't have anything that American capital wants, you have no reason to exist. And so we come back around right now to the situation with Israel. They don't have anything we want. They don't can anything, cook anything, build anything, make anything that we need, that we can't do for ourselves. But they do have money and an abundance of it. So we send them umpty billion dollars a year, which they then turn around and send back to us to pay for the crap that they use to go blow up Palestinian children, and it winds up being a net gain for the free marketeers. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that Gail was kind of pointed out, you know, the the area that Hamas bombed most recently is actually part of occupied Gaza. It's part of the occupied lands. So they weren't actually bombing Israel. They were bombing their own occupied territory. Like, we don't even talk about the fact that they, you know, it's given that because Israel just claims it is theirs now. You know, it's such a twisted subject, man. This subject has gotten so twisted. The situation is so twisted. There's so much history behind it. That I really wonder if we're ever going to get forward of this. Unless, kind of like Maddow had a discussion, I think it was yesterday, about it, that maybe it has to come down to doing a serious land deal. Because no nation that's separated, actually divided the way that Palestine is, can ever be secure. And Israel will never be secure when they're surrounded by a nation that they're dividing. So maybe there has to be a whole new land deal.
And I don't know what that deal is. Because because while you and I just sort of blithely blew right past it, there is an element of people, both Christian and non-Christian alike, which means Christian, Jew, and Muslim, all of whom can point to some portion of their magic book that says, "Yea, verily, I give unto thee everything from the western sea unto the mountains of Humnuptistan." You know, you got to remember that Abraham came out of Ur in the Chaldees. You know where Ur in the Chaldees is, right?
Refresh me.
We're still busy occupying it.
Oh, right.
There are places because before it was Babylon, it was a lot of other things. But there are places you can go to in, because it keeps changing hands, you see. There are places you can go to in the Old Testament that says, yeah, it's all going to be yours. Long as you keep lopping the end of the Johnson off your little boys. That's our bargain.
Well, you know, again, it's that thing, you know, have all the religions missed the whole point yet again? That, you know, they keep saying kind of the same thing. Isn't it maybe possibly that they're all just the same damn thing?
That you mean loony?
Have a right to it. Oh, no. But, you know, like, one of the discussions that, you know, has been bandied about in the past is, you know, where the Wailing Wall is and all that, which is really where everybody wants to have ownership of it, should become somehow some non-national territory, open to all, maybe overseen by the United Nations. Since it's so disputed and all these cultures claim it as their own, make it available to all of them.
See, I've thought about the way I put that, John, was to create a UN protectorate around the whole region. And if you people can't live in peace, we'll we'll kill you till we find some who can. And, you know, and that's I'm being a smartass, and that's obviously not an answer.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, this is where I find it so frustrating. If everybody just wake up and realize that, you know, no one has divine right to any piece of land, and that if you are, you know, of one faith or another, that is part of your person, that is part of your soul. No one can take that from you. It should never be about a piece of land.
Yeah. But that's what it is. And there's...
It's a really small piece of land.
It's a piece of land not worth having.
But twice the size of Washington, D.C. Or the Gaza Strip is. I mean, that's nothing.
Yeah.
I also recommend everybody check out Robert Fisk's most recent piece that's out there, which you can find at The Independent. And like I said, this and there's a another really great one at Common Dreams, which I've lost the link to now, but I'll get the other two into the chat room. This one from this Chilean Jew, that's the author's screen name at COS, is really what I wish I'd see more of from, you know, the mainstream. I just think it would be...
And by the way, just for folks listening at home, it will post soon, and if you have not heard Guy James's show today, you absolutely must. Guy had on his program a resident of Gaza.
Yeah, ELO was saying in the chat, I'm going to have to check that out.
And you could hear the terror in his voice.
Good on Guy.
See, being the way I am, John, I look at my children and I see Gazan children. I look at my children and I see Israeli children. And you know what? The children aren't the problem, but the children are paying the prices. And I call anybody who would do that and wage war that way to be the absolute most utter and subhuman brutes on the planet. And to the extent that I believe in anything that might meet and measure out damnation, I call them for it. You know, the side of the book that our culture was reared in, John, has a little passage that says, "Suffer the little children to come unto me. And better that a man never be born than he should hinder one of these."
I don't think I can add anything on top of that, mate. You have a great new year. Thanks for letting me come on and rant. I'll wait for the hate emails to come into my email box, but I can wear those. And I'm really curious about Guy's show. We'll be downloading that immediately.
Well, I was checking to see if it had posted, because I just had a note from Ben asking me what about today. So I don't know if it's posted yet or not. Betsy's telling me that she thinks it has. If it has, I would say that if you are a listener to the Horn, it's going to be one of those shows of guys that you must.
Yeah.
If you are not somebody, if you listen to Guy and there are people who you know that don't, well, copy it, send the link around, say you must listen.
I'll be sending it to Anthony for sure. He'll want to hear that.
Yeah. Well, John, I appreciate you saying this, and I appreciate you sort of carving out a space for us to do this in the program. And you know, it's so hard to talk about this because, you know, a lot of the issues we talk about happen within the territorial confines of the United States, and there's something you can do about it.
Yeah.
You know, you can vote. You can be a grassroots activist. You can organize your community. You can do something. But there is no more sickening feeling, as far as I know, in the human psyche as being powerless. Because the ability of another person to rend you powerless is the ability to strip you of your very humanity itself. And that's what this is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And I, like I said, the thing that really frustrates me is what I see from certain blind supporters is the same thing that I saw from the neocon Republicans. That don't dare question, just follow. And I find that to be the most dangerous thing you can do.
I want to share something with you real quick.
Okay.
This is from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 2. And it starts at verse 31. Or verse 30. But Sihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him. For the Lord thy God hardened his spirit. And there he goes again. Would you trust anybody that would behave like this? And the Lord thy God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate that he might deliver him into thy hand as appeareth this day. And the Lord said unto me, this is Moses talking. And the Lord said unto me, behold, I have begun to give Sihon and his land before thee. Begin to possess, that thou mayest inherit his land. Then Sihon came out against us, he and all his people, to fight at Jahaz. And the Lord our God delivered him before us, and we smote him and his sons and all his people. And we took all his cities at that time, and utterly destroyed the men and the women and the little ones of every city. We left none to remain. Only the cattle we took for a prey unto ourselves, and the spoil of the cities, which we took. And that's just one of them. Oh, it's plumb chock-a-mock with the smoting and the smiting and the taking and the little ones dashed, getting their heads a little dashed against the holy stones. It is brutal. And it's a brutality that happened 4,000 years ago. And is being perpetrated, yea, verily, unto this day.
And, you know, this, like, I think the fact that this, like, fundamentalist-type religional belief, the inability to question, ends up impacting so many issues, especially environmental ones, Bob, might be what has made me much more of a fervent atheist than I used to be, because I find the same lack of questioning allows people to deny the realities of what's going on with our planet. And if religion was just looked at as a philosophy, it would be different, not a belief. What was that thing from Dogma? Better to have an idea, because it's easier to change an idea.
Yeah.
With that, man, Happy New Year. Thanks for letting me do that.
Let's hope 2009 runs a little less bloody than 2008. Thank you, John. And give our best to Gail.
Have a good one.
Take care.
Yeah, all the best to your family. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. I had the wrong button. I've been having button problems tonight. We will do more of this. I would like your input. How do you feel about this? I run long tonight simply because I started late, because I was having button problems, because I was a little addlepated. But I'm not going to leave this issue alone. I've got a story for tomorrow evening that, unless something else pops up, will be the lead for prayer meeting. And it really speaks to a lot of this. And here's a hint. The religious insanity that drives and underpins so much of this garbage is visited first, last, and always on the children. And we'll leave it at that. And I don't mean to sound as harsh as I do, but, no, it's not that I don't mean to sound as harsh. I don't mean to sound as unloving. Because I am one of those people and you can hear it in John's voice, and it is something that runs common throughout the horn. The people who share their time listening, the people who volunteer their time to work on projects, the people who get behind the mic and host programs, the people who keep it going with their contributions. There is a common thread of a love of humanity and a recognition that the only human race, or the only race on earth, is the human race. That phony divisions like religions and ethnicities are constructs invented largely by white Western Europeans that were created to enforce a power and privilege structure. The idea of Palestinians and Israelis is one of those things. Because in a report that was suppressed several years ago, promptly suppressed the minute that the results came out, mitochondrial DNA sampling had been done of random individuals who identified themselves as Israeli and random individuals who identified themselves as Palestinian. The outcome of that DNA study was that there was not a hair's worth of genetic difference between them. So to those supporters of Israel who say that there's really no such thing as a Palestinian and it's a made-up word, guess what? There's no such thing as an Israeli either. To those who say there's no such thing as an Israeli, I say there is no such thing as a Palestinian. The blood all runs red. And I wish I was a guy who believed in curses and had the ability to curse people for what they do. Because they would be flying out of my mouth in whatever cursing language is required until the big invisible sky critter did start dropping pianos out of the sky on the people who are slaughtering the children. And you see, slaughtering the children's not tolerable at all, ever, 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 ever. I don't care what you call the children, slaughtering them is not all right. It wasn't all right when Colonel John Chivington in Colorado at Sand Creek slaughtered American Indian children and old women and old men and said, "Nits make lice." And it isn't okay now. If we want to talk about definitions of sin, there is no greater sin than slaughtering living, breathing children by any means and by any people. And we went to great pains following the Second World War to establish de minimis standards of conduct for combatants. And one of those was that no person engaged in war crimes and crimes against humanity may be heard to plead, "I was only following orders." So in the slaughter of these innocents in Gaza, the guilt extends from the lowest soldier to the highest general and politician. And whatever constitutes it, may God damn their souls unto some form of eternal isolation, torment, lake of fire, whatever you happen to believe in, may that damnation fall upon them. For they have earned it. Have they not? So that's the end of the program. I look forward to being with you tomorrow night for prayer meeting. Don't let me start with something else. We're going to start with what I've got planned. Remind me, in case I'm having button problems again. I want to thank all of you for the time that you have spent with us this evening. I want to thank you for your concern, your compassion, your caring. Thank you for listening, for calling. If you dialed the phone and I didn't get to you in time, I apologize. I'll do better. Promise. Just a little update to let you know. You may have heard John Wathen, when we were talking earlier, talking about United Mountain Defense and how they need help. I'm proud to announce that the people that I call the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, have stepped up and made a good and decent and sizable contribution to United Mountain Defense. And I'm so proud I could just bust. A lot of the people who are United Mountain Defense began as Mountain Justice Summer workers, volunteers at Coal River Mountain Watch. They learned the skills that they are practicing on the ground in Roane County, Tennessee, now as we speak, at Coal River Mountain Watch. That's legacy building. And that's a beautiful thing. So understand, when I talk about the bravest, hardest working people I know, as I've said before, it's not some slogan. I never asked their approval to refer to them that way. Some of them would probably be mildly, if not profoundly, embarrassed to know that I refer to them that way. But by God, I see their work firsthand, and I know. And it continues to be my honor and my privilege to have Coal River Mountain Watch's support in bringing the horn, not just me, but the horn to you. Thanks to John Fox, whom you just heard, our chief engineer. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks again, all of you who, through the PayPal contribution button or through the snail mail address, contribute to keeping the horn going. Thank you. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. There's not a stream that happens on the horn. There's not an archive and not a podcast that doesn't happen because of Ben's hard work. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.